Okay. Let us resume our work. Well, let us proceed to listen. 111, I think we are through to the question to the President. Michael, I think we are clear on the question that is that we are to according to the Constitution. And let us move to 112. If you are clear now about 111.
My son did visit as well, the notice period. Are we clear about the notice period? Are we reducing that?
Yes, ma'am.
Chair, the notice period has always been in terms of 108.6. That has always been the notice period for all questions, including the fact, and let me say the fact that it says must be submitted within 16 days. Where is that? Questions of the President must be submitted to the Secretary before 12 on a Monday, 16 days before the question that on which they are to be answered. Doesn't say at what point notice must be given to the President of the questions as they are approved. So that 16 days was a mainly administrative issue. And I think in terms of the Center for Constitutional Research, I think that made some input at the President's questions, 16 days are public to law, and maybe in terms of looking at more fresh topical issues, questions, that submission period should be reduced, but bearing in mind that the Speaker must still approve. So we will probably just have to consider that. But that the 3 days notice as the DA will apply to all questions.
Okay.
Because that was basically how it always worked.
Is it?
Yes?
What?
The speaker's
approval is coming up. So why don't we make it 7 days?
It's close to approve, sir. Yes, to approve. We're just agreeing that that's consequential of removing the secretary approval, or that the speaker has to approve. The speaker may take a view that the secretary should do that and facilitate on his behalf, but the speaker that is responsible for it. And we are proposing how many? 7 days notice? Yes, ma'am.
First of all, for clarity, 1110 and 1111 will now be one section and it will be questions to the President. Okay. So Michael has answered my question about the 108.6. 7 days also, I still think, is too long if we look at topicality and relevance and current issues. So I would, you know, like to keep it 3 days.
Well, let us, Larry's one, come in.
Thank you, Jay. I just have a question. The 16-day notice period, that is, when does the question paper, when does that appear on the question paper? Because if we're thinking about questions that can now be referred to the President from, that would have been referred to a minister, the question would then, the President would then need time to get information, because remember the minister is the one directly, have access to that particular issue that they in their line function. But if that question is not going to be able to be directed to a President, the President will be trying to get the responses from the relevant ministers. So will that affect that most seriously?
It will probably to some extent if the questions are going to be line function specific matters, but I think we did talk about that they should probably be broad within the constitutional boundaries of the President, so that there aren't sort of a requirement for detailed information in terms of life function specific issues. But Mr. Ellis will also know that during the time when he and Mr. Jeffrey fought about the issues, these were all concessions made. It will be 9 days to the deputy president and 16 days to the president. And if the president is the head of the executive, then you can speed up the process.
There are two proposals, though. The DA was proposing 3 days. I think she will say at least 7 days. 7 days, really, I think is fair. And then it's fine for the executive on that. For the presidency, because you are posing a very important question to the president. It's not really about another issue by the president in terms of the constitution. I think it will be fine for the day. Michael, is that a problem?
No. I'm just want to be clear, is it 7 working days or is it going to be 7 days? Because we have
different...
bear in mind that we agree that the working days of Parliament is Monday to Friday. Those are, of course, excluding holidays and other public holidays. And therefore, if it's 7 days of the working days, I think it's almost fair. Because who wouldn't want the president to prepare for questions during recess or during the holidays? I don't think that's what you want the president to do. I think 7 days, 7 working days, I think is fair. You can then allow the president to come on some of these issues.
If it is working day, and we agree that it's Monday to Friday, then I would suggest that we should make it 5 working days, because then it gives us a week, because that is actually what we wanted to achieve. So it's more than the 3, but it's less than the 7 working days. So that would be my suggestion.
Okay, let us put that as a proposal, and then we are going to propose that to the subcommittee, and then we hope the Rules Committee will consider that sympathetically. And
from the point of view, that then means virtually the question, if questions are going to be on a Friday, and I understand, I know we've taken that out, it means they're virtually going to be in the Wednesday before the next question day, or a week before, you know, regardless of when it is. And it does make sense, yeah. Yeah, that's right, yeah.
I think in terms of administration, that will give a lot of problems.
You won't work day and night?
No.
Oh.
No.
We do it already.
You see, that really might be a question, Peter. Office has to do it all the time. I don't mind doing it all the time.
But that's the proposal that we are going to make. First, we will make a proposal once a month for presidency. Real question, then the proclaiming committee will work out in terms of the hours. How many hours, how many days, how many hours, and then how long it's going to take all that. And then at least 5 days before. Then there's a notice period, really. Hopefully it's not going to cause problems in terms of approval and moving on. If it doesn't come to cause problem and then overstretching the parliamentary staff, I think we can move on that. I think the president got more capacity really to answer questions and do everything. There's no problem about that. Yes.
I think it might just help if we look slightly more closely at how many hours. How many hours will determine how many questions you can accommodate. And therefore, how many questions on a rotational basis do parties get an opportunity in sequence? So if you're going to accommodate 4 or 6, you can say not more than an hour or not more than an hour and a half. If you complete your questions in that time or before that time, that's fine. But when that time runs out, then any remaining questions, the replies have to be received and put in Hansard. So I think trying to get to the approximate number of questions can be important. Also in terms of giving parties smaller parties as well an opportunity to ask questions.
Well, we should look at it. That's what causing that the problem in committee material is they now we are bringing it to us. It's a difficult one. But I think the head of state general should be allowed not less than 1.5 hours.
Yeah.
I think 1.5 hours would be fine. It's too long.
No, but I mean, it's not limited. The citizen has to answer six questions. If he takes 3 hours, he must get through six questions.
No.
He has unlimited speaking time in the state of the nation, the response to whatever.
Chair, currently 2 hours are allocated to all questions, whether it's present or etc. And we basically always are always within that sort of margin of 2 hours because, as Ms. Killian saying, like Ms. Kalyan, the president has unlimited speaking time in terms of reply, and so we don't have a sort of a situation where we can say in the past with and I haven't checked in terms of when President Bekie replied to questions because he stuck to the time 3 minutes etc. and the supplementaries. At this point in time, we don't have a sort of clear sort of indication of time.
I did not ask because
we are putting the president now, and we must consider also because when the president is in the house answering questions, it's only business of the day. There's not a business of the day except the answering of questions by the president. And then there shouldn't be harmful to increase your time. Wouldn't be harmful to do so because it's every month and every month and it doesn't really going to cause more harm if you increase some time on that because it's only that day for the president. But also the president will always want to answer members of parliament and in general always want to answer members of parliament, interact with them, raise issues with them, answer some of the questions with them. And don't be harmful though then, to go for 1.5 hours, 3 hours, because the head of state is general. And then, but also you want also all parties who are represented in parliament to have some space sometimes to pose questions to the head of state. The head of state interacting with parliament in raising some of the matters of very importance, and I think should do that. And is that going to cause problem in terms of the staffing issues?
Would it not, in all reasonableness, cause problems for the president to be intensively answering questions and counting your words in verbatim responses to questions for 3 hours is very taxing. I'm not sure that you can expect that of any individual to stand up in parliament and answer for 3 hours.
He's a big boy, you can deal with it.
No, I do think that we must really think of that too. And then really, I think 2.5 hours should be maximum. And then 2.5 hours. Yeah, I think it's fine. It's 2.5 hours of engagement.
As with all due respect, it would be the first time that we are placing a
time limit on the head of state or the president to speak. I think if you leave it at six, limited to six questions, he can take himself. If he's tired, he can rush it.
Mm-hmm.
If he wants to take his time, he can take his time.
Yeah.
See,
that's what he's talking about in the sweeper going to life.
That's
not what he's talking about in the
make it very
cheap. I think we should consider that one. He wanted to agree with you on that one. What is important is the content. More than the time, I mean, and the way we've been phrasing it is like there's a particular responsibility one to be able to change our impressions of how to reach out to the broader society, and the president as the executive authority carries a lot of information for all of us. If you're talking about car, give him 2 minutes, he doesn't tell us much, but he's still energetic, he still wants to tell us more. Give him time until he gets tired.
Yes, yes.
Okay.
It's a very technical point, but I think what we have to do is we have to say that the president, I would prefer to say the president rather than the presidency, must answer questions at least once per month or otherwise determined by the program committee, simply because over December, for example, the House doesn't sit. So there will be a month here or there where it's not practical. So I think you have to build in that qualification if the program committee may decide otherwise on specific occasions. And then I think you have to have a rule saying, as we've agreed, or I think as the task team agreed, that the president may delegate to the deputy president in terms of the constitution to ask questions, but must ask questions at least once. And I think what you can say is once per term, per parliamentary term. So I think those are the ways you can phrase the rules that we've agreed.
Okay, we'll consider the phrase, and then I think we'll work on that. But I think the essence of what you are trying to do, I think you catch that already. The president answering questions 2.5 hours, 6 days notice, 6 to 5 days notice, and I think that would be fine. Then we can work it out that how we want to do that. The procurement committee in other areas. Okay? Yeah, June.
Just before we go away from this item, I just again wanted to ask if we can't just, we understand what is meant by the approval, but can we not just reformulate it so that it is not interpreted as a sort of a political sanction? We understand that it's compliance with the NA rules and the guidelines and all of that, but it's just a phraseology. Again, we must remember, once the rule process, we have completed the process, there will be lots of people outside there, Center for Constitutional Development and Ethical and this and that, and then say, oh, look at this, you see, this is unconstitutional. So I just feel again, we understand what it means, and we understand it must be regulated in terms of the rules, but it's just the approval sort of doesn't send the right message. That's what I'm concerned about.
Well, I think the advocate are many here. They will refrain, of course, not moving the essence of what they're trying to do. They speak on other school, but they speak as such a French
language.
That's in French, but I'm not approved. But everything is according to the rules of their house. It's also according to the criteria that they are seeing. Of course, Michael is going to relook at the criteria, but in this criteria must be adopted by the rules committee. For them to be implemented, because we can't put all of them in the rules, and that's what we are saying. Okay, can we proceed to that? 1-1, 2-1, I think we are sure.
Yeah, we're not sure.
It's a good question. 1-1, 2, agent question. 1-1, 2-1, yes.
In other terms on urgent questions, now that we have with questions reduced it to 3 notice days, a notice period of 3 days, that makes it the equivalent almost of an urgent question. The only thing that an urgent question does is to include a question out of cluster. And from that perspective, it may be useful to retain the urgent question process.
I guess that we'll accept that because one day we'll have cluster, social transformation cluster answering questions, and a very urgent question pop out, then we should allow that member to raise a question. And then even if it's not a cluster that is relevant at the day for that particular question. I think allow members of parliament really. If there's a very urgent matter that is happening, sometimes in constituencies, because I think that's what we want to encourage, that members must raise questions about their constituencies. It shouldn't be the paper, otherwise it's a problem. and then if you do that. But I think we should retain that. Yes.
The notice period, is that going to be 3 days as well? As other questions?
But an urgent question, of course, would be a little bit limited in terms of number. I think goes to the urgent question. Why can't
you want it?
Then one day I think will be fine for urgent questions.
Okay.
And can we proceed? And then are we agreeing with two, number one to place urgent question? We are fine with that. And then I find it three, the speaker must confide the date of current business before approving an urgent question.
And then three, we are fine on that.
Can I just say on the criteria with urgent questions, they're sometimes problematic.
The criteria is normally using the rules of debate, rule 103, matters of importance criteria. But part of the problem also, Chair, is a member wants to place an urgent question must deliver a signed copy. Yes, on a day with the question is indicating that it is an let me just look from the rule book. Number 1121. A member may, with the permission of the speaker, place an urgent question or already find the question paper for a question there on which such a question would not normally be dealt with. I just want to raise, now if you have, let's say cluster for governance cluster is coming up, and this has happened before, a particular party missed an opportunity to submit a question, and now they want to submit a question, say, for that cluster as an urgent question. The rule 1121 actually says it should be on a day on which that question would not normally be answered, which means the cluster is coming up, so it is for a day on which the question would normally have been answered in any case, which means now you no longer fulfill that criteria and your urgent question falls away. So what I'm trying to say is maybe we should look at criteria that makes it easier for the member to access the executive with an urgent question, and that we probably just re-look that specific formulation of 1121.
I think that you are missing the essence of the action. Because why should, if the speaker is dead, we've been trying to keep it like that, the speaker gives up, why should the member go look for the executive? Let's deal with it on the basis that the member wants to ask the question and just follow the normal procedures. And if there's approval or whatever from the speaker, then the question goes ahead. The member, minister is not in the house. You see, we've been trying throughout this process also to maintain the executive and manage more of parliamentary work and allow the executive to also understand the rules of parliament and learn from those rules of parliament. The moment you ask members to start looking for the executive, you are breaking down that doctrine that I like of separation of power. We should not encourage that. And you are getting the speaker totally undermined if you start running around there. If I hear you correctly. But I don't want to really give in to where the separation of powers is being put aside. I don't want to buy into that.
I think the problem is slightly different. The permission of the speaker here is not about compliance with rules and guidelines. The permission that the speaker has to give here, the speaker has to be convinced that you have to allow this question to be asked out of cluster. And so the minister has to come in specifically out of cluster to come and reply to this question. So there must be some convincing reason, reasonable reason, that the speaker can accept why you want to make the special arrangement in this case. And so you need to look at some kind of criteria why it cannot wait for the next time the relevant philosopher comes around. And I think that's the issue. What criteria would apply?
I just want us, in order to make it easier so that we do not, just to delete off the question they on which such a question would not normally be dealt with, just to delete that. And Mr. Boy, you did hear me wrong, I wasn't...
Okay, so you are saying, Mr. Plankey, that we take away the phrase that the question would not normally have been asked in that cluster. So we want to take that part away to obviate the problem where a member misses their opportunity to put the question and but sees that it's important and then has the benefit of being able to put it. Okay.
If I look at the way that it's posed, I can interpret that as meaning also that a question can, such a question can be scheduled the same day that the president is also a question, not just clusters, it can be on days where there's questions to the president also. The such questions can also be answered.
An urgent question is an urgent question.
Sir, that's a problem. We have made, this is an internal arrangement of Parliament where clusters are not a rules. But I think the clusters were introduced to make it easy. Because ministers are from, the executive is based in Pretoria. They wouldn't have a situation that all ministers, when there's a question, they must be here. It was for practical purposes. That they must also at the same time run government, and then they had accountable here. That was allowing that process. That's why we have clusters. They're not part of the rules, but for practical purposes. I think that's why we have clusters here. And then I think the urgent question issue, I think, is very clear. It should be a real urgent question issue. Once the speaker says, I agree, an urgent matter, surely the office of the speaker must contact the relevant minister to be there when there's a session. Of course, if the minister is not there, so the deputy minister should be able to come in and answer the question. And then I think that's what should happen too. Because it's very rare anyway to have this question in general. It's just in case that this question, in fact, and I think Alice only knows some of this question, what happened. And in fact, generally, this question are very rare. It doesn't happen every time. And it happens sometimes once a year, I don't think it caused a lot of harm for the speaker to deal with it that way. Michael, I think you are able.
Yeah, I just want to say in other parliaments,
certain questions are used quite frequently because they are so accessible to the member. I think, and that's why I just try to reduce that from saying on which a question would not normally be dealt with, just to delete that, make it more accessible for members to use the mechanism.
I'm confused. The whole idea of urgent questions is questions taken out of the cluster. If you take out those words, that means that you could come with an urgent question for the same cluster in which the minister is in any case answering questions. Is that the intention?
Yeah.
Is it?
My view is that if contested is a social cluster that is answering questions in terms of the schedule, and then an urgent question is approved, but the minister is not part of the social cluster, it's the economic cluster. That minister must be informed that he must be there when this question is posed in the house. If the minister is not there, the deputy minister must come in to answer that question. I thought that's what we are trying to do.
If I may say so, that you have submitted your questions 3 or 4 days before, and suddenly something very, very urgent comes up, even relating to that cluster, which is going to be debated. And you suddenly say, this is such an important issue, I've got 24 hours, I'm going to do it today for the cluster of that week. So even though the cluster might be meeting, it nevertheless might still be relevant to place a question of urgent reply.
Can I just respond? Chair, your scenario would block the question because it is a day on which the minister would normally have responded to questions in that cluster. And as it stands here, your urgent question application gets blocked. Because it's a day on which the... And that's why I say just to leave this portion so that you open it up.
We have now changed sub 2, is that correct? Well, okay, are we still coming to sub 2?
Yeah.
Okay.
Okay, the last question. Yes.
The urgency of question, does it then, how is it then answered in the house? Is this question then given priority in the house? Okay. Does it get a rotation? In terms of rotation, so how does that work?
Well, it's not that
the urgent question is approved, but the speaker takes precedence. Because once the speaker says, this is a very, it, of course, it must be in line with the criteria, and the speaker says, I approve this urgent question, it must take precedence. Otherwise, it's no longer an urgent question, it doesn't take precedence.
Yeah.
Is that what Mike wants us to do?
Yes, Chair. The question takes precedence. It gets answered before all other questions because it's an urgent question. And I think we have said the deadline is 24 hours.
Yeah.
And in terms of that, the question will be edited, approved, and everything. And I'm not sure if it will make for publication, but it could be then included on the order paper for that matter or something else.
I think just to follow that, does it then mean are we going to then amend this rule to make provision for that, to make that clear, because we have to make that change.
The rule should be amended accordingly, because the rule must be very clear. There shouldn't be 100 interpretations of one rule.
Yeah.
And every philosopher will say that every member of parliament, even if he's not a lawyer, like Inyami Boy, must understand the rules. Because otherwise you can't apply the rules if you have to consult advocate Johnny Delange before he raises the hand. That young himself must know the rules, because the rules must be written in such a way that they facilitate the work of members in Parliament. That's what we wanted to do. And then I think we'll amend it accordingly to catch what we are trying to say. Because we can't be actually, we can't take precedent generally. And but members will be there and then take to the chair and then you will start to some people. Okay. Sub 2, what is the problem with Sub 2? I think Sub 2 is very clear. Is there any problem with Sub 2?
No, it's just a 6 working days.
6 working days? To change.
Yeah.
Sub 3, the speaker must consult the local committee, is fine.
That's fine.
Another issue for now, just the president.
In other words, we will just obviously, it should probably become the new two, just to stipulate that the urgent question will take precedence on the question.
I just want one thing clarified. The questions to ministers are the clusters that happen every week. The questions to the presidency are not, in that sense, question days. There are separate sessions arranged with the presidency, and on that day, nothing but the questions to the presidency are dealt with.
Yeah.
So that urgent question to a minister cannot be accommodated on a day of questions to the presidency.
Yeah.
That's my understanding?
Yeah.
I think it is correct, but we should make special provisions to say that urgent questions will not be scheduled on a day when the presidency is to answer. And why I'm saying that is, remember, if we have a provision for urgent questions, it could also be that on a day for which the president is scheduled to appear, there could be an urgent question that should take precedence on the president's list of questions. So if we can just have common understanding on that, that would also make provision for an urgent question, which actually overrides, because something has happened in the, you know, in the meantime. If we reduce the number of days, Chairperson, as we are doing now, I think it is less likely to happen, because then, you know, otherwise you submit so long in advance. Many things happen out there.
No,
should be a real urgent question.
Yeah.
Because we are a national assembly. Therefore, we are dealing with matters of nation, every corner of the South Africa. There may be very serious issues somewhere.
Yeah.
Then a member must be able, during the question time for ministries or collaterals, to raise an urgent question, provided, of course, that is approved by the Speaker. And then I think that is fine, really. The rule, I think, is very simple, the way we are going to be structuring it. Then we'll clarify some of the issue. But the members, again, they must have the criteria for that.
Yeah.
Because otherwise, we are going to be flooded by questions that should be going for departments and for answering and other issues on that. Because is it not that also the question for oral reply to a minister is that is a podcast question, Chair. And there will be very few members of parliament who can raise questions of oral reply to ministers without any way knowing exactly what they want to achieve politically. Because the podcast is a short, is an interpolating type of discussion. It's a short, real engagement with the minister on political issues, generally speaking, on that. Because if you need information, it's a written question. It's a written question, then they give all the specific answers, another thing on that. Pam?
It's a question, of maybe I misunderstand the issue, but if you grant an urgent question, you have a day's notice, say it's then, it has to be in a question day, is that right? So you can't be in any other day. You have
working day.
It can be in any working day.
I would think it
would
be on a working day,
Chair. You can't print a special question paper. So how then do you pose the question to the minister in the House? Does it just appear on the order paper?
Yeah. Well, that's one of the that was what suggested for me, Chair. But I think we will probably have to look at the practicalities. And then
start to come with a proposal. I thought we have an agreement on the matters of principle, and then you said administratively. Definitely these rules are going to impact quite a lot of administration work that has to be done. And I thought we just have to keep on carrying along that these things are impacting now. Won't be able to describe and work on them here. What they just said earlier was that administrator will then relook at the whole process. Because definitely so the process, the rules are changing a lot of things within the whole institution here, and they're going to impact on how they're being administered. And won't be able to write it up here.
Yeah.
That's what she wouldn't agree. We have to do them somewhere.
You can also print an urgent question paper?
Yes, yes.
Would that urgent question for questions on singularly?
Yeah,
that is good. Chair, on the basis of the discussion, I'm confused again about one issue. I understood that urgent questions are always to be taken on question days. Are we not saying that an urgent question, or are we, can be accommodated on a non-question day? I'm asking.
That's what we are saying,
non-question.
No, non-question. I think what we are trying to do is a difficult situation, because urgent matters may happen even if it's not a question day. What you do with that is an issue that we must ourselves really apply our mind on. Because it is an urgent matter that happened today, we are dealing with a bill on civil pensions. And I think we'll behave about that one. moment. And then that video I bring you today, but an urgent matter happened. Then a member must wait until, I thought really you are trying to accommodate members of parliament when there's an urgent issue, because it happens sometimes. And then if you plan for every time, some of the things can't be planned. You know that that's my view in terms of urgent matters. There may be urgent matters when there is no question raised at all. What do you do as a member of parliament? I think it's the bigger problem we must address our side. Because I think Kafka is raising an issue. Because we should apply our mind. Do we? There's no question day to day. An urgent matter happens somewhere in the Eastern Cape. A member in that constituency wants to raise it. Would you not allow a member? Because if the speaker approves it is an urgent matter, that matter takes precedence in a sitting of the House. And therefore, if it takes precedence, can that member then stand up there and raise the issue when the ministers, in fact, are not even there? Because it's not a question day. Because what we have created by default is that ministers will only come when there's a question day. When there are no question days, they wouldn't be around. Therefore, an urgent matter would have no purpose when ministers are not even around on that day. Unless, of course, the minister will be advised by the speaker, then he'll be able to move from Swan to Cape Town. We should find a better way of doing it here.
Consideration, Chair, sometimes the issues on the program, on the order paper on a particular day, are in themselves urgent. Finalisation of the budget debate, for instance, or other critical issues, major issues that come before the House on the order paper. Are you then going to allow individual members, even on the basis of some urgency, to override the priorities which the Assembly has set in terms of issues that have to be dealt with and at particular times? So that becomes an issue as well, that if the Speaker allows an urgent question on a non-question day, the Speaker would have to decide also, I think, on what time during that day the question can be accommodated, if at all.
Chairperson, you actually made a very valid point, and I mean that is why we also discussed last week. What mechanisms do you have as a member of parliament when an issue is coming up and a constituency member will tell you, what can you do? This is, you know, or an area, a community can say. Then you feel, sometimes you feel, what are the mechanisms that I can get an immediate response on this matter, because this is a very important matter. Now, I would certainly agree that we need to achieve a balance. We need to create the opportunity because the matters of national importance that must be processed by a particular day, deadline, etc., are important. But equally, we should not ignore constituency matters that actually pass the scrutiny of the speaker for an urgent question. So I would like us to make provision for that on any day. Bearing in mind that the speaker will apply his mind as to where to schedule it on that day. Doesn't mean necessarily. We could say that it should preferably take precedence, provided that, you know, that other matters on the order paper, which are also very important, would be considered to precede this matter. Something like that. Otherwise, we're going to miss it. And secondly, you know, I've gone through the document as we compiled, because we again up against the wall with how often are we going to have questions for oral replies. Last week we were talking and we were saying in the House of Commons they are processing far more questions. Our question days are very short. We should look at the possible extension or having them more regular. Now I have not seen that on our summary document flagged. And I just wanted to make sure that we don't forget that issue. We must come back to that, because we've agreed that questions, and particularly questions for oral reply, is a very important mechanism to exercise our oversight over the executive. So I think we must just flag that as well to come back to.
I have a little bit of a problem with this. Putting a question of an urgent nature on a paper other than on a question day presents a problem. Is that not where you deal with it as a matter of for discussion under an important matter? under source 30, rule 30, no, rule 30. I think that is where that falls under. It's an issue of, I think it was 30, wasn't it? No, sorry, 103, yeah. But matter of public importance, that's where that should come under, if it's that important. Otherwise it should remain on a question day. I think we're trying to complicate things a little too much.
Chair, because I agree with Ms. Eaton fully, because in fact, as it stood here before we are about to change it, or were changing it, it intended for use on a question day. The urgent question was intended for question days. And I think maybe we should keep it that way. Otherwise, we're going to have unforeseen issues. 103 and 104 are there to be used.
I disagree, because 103 refers to a matter of public importance. It then takes the form of a motion on the order paper and a debate. Separate the two. We are talking about a question. A compromise could be to have it on a question day, but given the way the program has gone this year, I think we had three question sessions, and if we're going to limit it in that fashion, it means that every time we go into an election mode or World Cup mode or whatever, then the program is adjusted according to that, and then the opportunity for question day falls away. If you take this coming week's program, you know, we sit on a Tuesday, on a Wednesday we sit for 1 hour because convention says when a Minister of Finance presents his statement, no other business happens. We hamper ourselves with these conventions and then the work of Parliament doesn't get done.
That's post-race college, and we can take a compromise approach, and that's within the question day, and then further than that. But the problem is that things and questions would happen every day of a member's life, generally speaking. And then we are saying that we have to wait until there's a question day. And when the matter happens today, we have to wait for another 3 days, about 5 weeks in fact. And that's the point that we are trying to address. How do we balance the two? Can we flex it? And we move reflective, because it's a very important point that we are trying to raise. Because it's difficult to predict what will happen next time. And but we don't want those members of parliament to simply flat the speaker. But the advantage that the speaker must approve. Therefore, it should be a very rare thing that will happen for a speaker to approve it as a matter of agent, question of agent, because that has caused problems. But I'm trying to reflect this. And then as we continue, we apply our mind, we come back to it. Yes,
sir. Our senator has flagged it. Take the principle that you want an activist parliament. That's what we've been, that's what really encouraged this particular one, that we want to allow members to feel that they can raise issues that affect them in their constitution. That it makes it different than a public matter. We should be able to, what we are saying, we're not just solely about ourselves, yeah. We're also trying to say to the public, your issues that you have raised, we are raising them inside parliament on this day. So this is where these urgent issues are coming in. And for me, this urgent question, that's what we are trying to change from the other approach that you usually have to wait for 5 minutes of work like that. There is an urgent issue, there's something that has happened in my constituency, can I be given an opportunity to raise it within the institution? Now for me, it does work within a developmental state, because you are then allowing issues of importance that happens within communities to be raised within the assembly. That's the difference for me. And whatever we flag, but let's accommodate this and leave the principles there and deal with administrative parts differently. But for me, practically, let's maintain urgent question.
It has been done that activists would pose more questions. Activist parliament, okay. But let us flag this one. we may phrase it accordingly. Karen, you wanted to raise a point? And then can we phrase it? Of course, we are not objecting to it. We are just looking at applicability of it, not their objection. We think members have the right to raise urgent questions. But how do we do that and when? The question that we have to apply our mind to. Yes, sir.
I think part of the solution may be when we go to rule 113 sub 1. Question for oral reply have precedence on Wednesdays. The scholar has just indicated that this Wednesday there will be no questions. And I understand that the number of question days has been reduced, that by no means every Wednesday is first and foremost a question day. And if there is a, if it's made clear in the rules that question days, that on Wednesdays questions get precedence, that means that you can't do other business and not do questions unless you're suspending this rule. And that requires a majority decision of the House, as the staff team has suggested. So that it should be inviolate that on Wednesdays you're going to do questions. And that would mean that every Wednesday you're going to do questions, and that would give you a once a week opportunity for urgent questions as well. But if the question sessions become arbitrary, and for all kinds of other reasons you're going to drop question days, including during budget sessions and so on and so forth, then you're creating the problems that the Chair has also been indicating in Mr. Boy in terms of agency. So I think if you make it clear that question days every Wednesday, and to get away from that you need to suspend the rule and not just take a program committee decision contrary to the rule, would be the answer.
So, okay, but it won't have real negative impact to agility because it's class are four. At the moment, there are how many? Four clusters. Simply means that once a month, really, class will ask a question in their house, generally speaking. Because it's once every week, we don't sit even every Wednesday anyway. We'll be just to say that because we'll be at that day when we're not even sitting because of our committee work and other things. I think it doesn't cause strain, because we are trying to balance the strain that we can put on the experience in terms of resources, not in terms of them counting to account, L1 to account, but of course again they are based in Swan, here. Then that's what we are trying to balance, it's not really protecting them from accounting to the balance. I think you are fantastic, I think you should phrase it that way now. Okay. Madam?
Just a little word in defense of the ministers, just in the sense that we must just remember that our parliament has changed, and if we say the ministers are answering questions in the Commons every single day, it's their procedure to do questions every day, and it's not ours, but also they don't have the distances that we have. The fact that we haven't, you just said, an administration, I think, so, and also the demands on the times of ministers have changed considerably since we started parliament 20 years ago. Previously, we were isolated, so it was easy for ministers to be here in parliamentary session time. And I'm not saying parliament shouldn't have precedence in their diaries as well. It's obviously it's important, but we must just keep that in mind when we determine notice periods and for them to be here.
Trying to balance the interest of the executive, the parliament, but you know, Marina, that all members of the executive except the president are also members of parliament. Therefore, it's primary responsibility of a member of parliament to execute the role of parliament. The member of executive, when they're in Swan, they're executing the mandate of parliament. But because, that's why the cluster system was very useful, because it allows them to come in terms of clusters. But also, it's not going to be every Wednesday, every week again, because there's also what we call committee week, there's no switching at all. It's not going to drain in terms of the resources of the ability to come here. Sometimes once a month anyway, really there's a Wednesday that is open for questions. And there's one cluster, another 4 months, another cluster. That's how it works in practical terms. It's not every week then when we are here. It's only when we are sitting in the plenary where they will answer questions on that. I think then next week is plenary session. And then they will be here, of course, because of the finance minister. But I don't think there are questions this week. There are no questions this week. And that's because of the finance minister. Yeah, they're presenting something exciting to us. Therefore, you won't do that. I think that it doesn't really cause more harm in terms of stress. Because you don't want the executive also to be here every day. And then because they have to govern wherever they are too. So they must execute the mandate that we are giving them to do. But at the same time, they must come and account to Parliament when there's session time. In terms of cluster, it happens once, sometimes in 3 months, really, to have a question into one cluster. I don't think it's going to overstretch us on that. It allows enough space for executive and legislature to work. Okay, can we close on that much? Yes. Marina, we are fine with your executive now.
And I was just saying the urgent question, what we were talking about scheduling every day, that's
the question. Yeah, the urgent question one. Of course, the urgent question is 1 minute. If the minister is not there, in 2 minutes, I can answer that question. Well, of course, not every executive portfolio has a deputy minister, but we accept that. But it's not going to happen every time. Sometimes you are scared of something that never happens sometimes. No, no, my chef is not coming, they're not executive. Time allocation is a truth of your wits, for.
And also a danger.
It's a danger.
No,
I'm just raising. I'm saying that when we're dealing with the Chief Forum, we said that we are going to come to that issue later. Just to give some powers. What is the power of this forum? But also they are
The reason for the time allocation here is this is all about protecting members and their right to ask questions. As it is, the House doesn't get to the questions for any question day. And therefore, members should have the security of knowing that at least 2 hours are going to be set aside, so that it cannot be a program committee decision. It doesn't suit us this week, let's make it just 1 hour or half an hour or whatever. And this is a security for members, and I think that's the intention.
No, I think that's fine. It explains the purpose. Yes?
To increase the time allotted for questions. I really do believe so. I think we should be looking at to increasing that time to a minimum of 3 hours.
But I agree that we should have a specific day, Wednesday. I was just saying, you know, if Cabinet is always meeting on that day, is it a wise day to have questions? But this is my, I will settle for Wednesdays, but I would like to have at least 3 hours. And Chair, quite frankly, you can't leave Parliament in any case in peak hour traffic, so you can just as well stay on until 6 o'clock, and then thereafter proceed to your study group.
In terms of habit, it will be difficult to change. And then the executive meet general on Wednesdays. That's why we are meeting at 3, is to accommodate the executive. Can't we have another day for questions to the executive? And then, can be these days? Because it's here. Yeah. 3 to 6. Okay.
I suspect that Mr. Seaton has forgotten what it's like to be a member of Parliament. I'll say more recently than she is. The current question session is probably the most boring part of Parliament. And to take that from 2 to 3 hours is probably the most hideous thought in the world.
Well, okay, but it's going to be the most vibrant one. Interpolation will come one day. No, but I think the point that you want to do, though, allow members enough time to pose questions for oral reply to ministers. If 3 hours is fine, because how many parties in parliament there are? 9?
No,
there are 13. 13? I don't count the one person's parties in. No. That's why they're forced marriage, anyway.
No,
okay, I agree with you. They shouldn't be forced to. But the point that we want them to... First, we want to have enough time for members of parliament to pose questions. We are accepting that principle. And then it may be boring sometimes, as you are saying, but on many occasions it's a very exciting time for members of parliament. Generally, in my view, it's been very exciting. In fact, also, ladies, we're making it more exciting. That's why now we must come back and make it more exciting.
Question through you, sir. Is Mr. Boy thinking of becoming a member of another party or a single person party, because he's so accommodating to everybody, including single member parties? I am suspicious. I think that he is trying to make sure that when he is a single member party, he has the opportunity to participate fully.
No, it's in jest. But the point that you are raising, though, is that the governing party has a real responsibility to ensure that all parties in parliament, they have a say. The governing party has really that interest that every party in parliament has a say. We must hear their voices, even if we agree with them, but we must hear their voices in parliament because they represent a certain section of our community. Generally, and big or small, and therefore that is why I think Member Boy is trying to accommodate the Bula. Okay.
Can you proceed? And then your mission.
We agree on 3 hours.
3 hours. Yeah. Fair. We start at 3 and 6.
Yeah.
Anyway, ask me.
No, but I think the point that you are raising there is that the parliament is evolving. What we put as a limit at a certain point in time may not apply now, because members of parliament are getting much more active in their approach, therefore they must allow enough time to raise questions or oral reply to minister. But also, you are becoming now, you are very artful in terms of how parliament works. And you may find, in fact, that the parties that they may emerge post-election next year, hopefully they won't be 19, and then therefore they have time really for them also to have a discussion on this. I think 3 hours won't really kill a cluster. I think the cluster will have enough time to do that. Is that the same?
If we agree on 3 hours, can we also change in the course of each question, 4 supplementary questions may be asked? There are 4 supplementary questions. Can we also insist that, because if we have 3 hours, then it means we have enough time for supplementary questions.
Okay. I have dealt with that one.
Yeah.
On question, on oral question, generally. He came in even by default, because it's actually an urgent question. And then we allow Honorable Boy to lead us to temptation to start dealing with issues that we shouldn't be dealing with. Because question time, generally we allow that. But we're dealing with the limit in terms of time. That we want 3 hours precisely because we want members of parliament to hold the initiative to do that on Wednesday. And then I think that's enough time really for members on that. And then, of course, members of governing parties also do have time to pose many questions. And then questions are proportional. They are proportional. And that's why the smaller parties must also allow some time to ask questions to ministers. I think you are really accommodating everyone on that. some of one women class. Yeah.
We haven't done the supplementary questions yet, but I would not support that. And I'll tell you one thing. The supplementary thing is developing the art of pressing the button. And it's an equalizer. So you don't need to extend the number of supplementary questions. You want to actually process more questions, because that's our problem.
Yeah.
So if we now extend it to 5 supplementaries, we're just going to fit with 10 questions the question day again. So I would not support that, but I would certainly support a retention of sub-3. That's the reply. You see, Chairperson, if we've now limited the number of subdivisions to 2, so it must be now easier for a minister to respond in 3 minutes. And with a possible extension by 2 minutes and not more. Otherwise, again, it's becoming boring. That is where I agree with Mark. If the ministers ramble on and ramble on and the speaker doesn't say, sorry, your time is up, and proceed to the next question, or the supplementary, we will not create the activist parliament that we actually want.
Okay, I think 3 minutes and 4 minutes, I think we are the same. A minister
takes
2 minutes, and then there's 2 minutes or something. Very good. Very long 2 minutes. We could improve the supplementary
one
instead of.
Because
they
really
want to
assure
that the minister must answer the question.
The minister must answer the primary question that is put. And then 3 supplementary will be fine, because what you want us to do, that members should be allowed to pose as many primary questions as possible. And of course, the supplementaries are assisting other members also to come in, trying to make it very vibrant, and they are sometimes not really assisting us to allow as many members as possible to pose the real question that they want to pose. Yeah.
I would like to see it stay at 4.
But what is the
issue?
That's really informal. Yeah. It's appropriate for us to. Julie, don't intimidate members. You wouldn't know that sometimes you may be working with them very soon. You may cross the floor. I think what is what we should do is to break for lunch. I think they know when you come back. I think 30 minutes is always appropriate for us. Let us break for lunch and see 25 minutes.
One.
Because I think that the project, these are the Find that over. Find him over here and bring
him. Okay, I will skip this one.
So find him and slap him where he is.
And
Then we'll not have this.
If another one comes, he must send the room.
Yeah.
Stand there in the corridor. Stand there in the corridor.
Thank you. To your advantage, by the way.
Oh,
well, can I keep my feet in?
Now you know what we're talking about.
And Ellis, I think we do have your experience on this area for us. What do you want us to do?
Mr. Chairman, I listened to those to the people who are still in Parliament today and saying that they would prefer to have four. But I recall often only two or three supplementaries were in fact asked. And I do believe that it's more important that we try and get through as many questions in the afternoon rather than concentrating too much on any one question. So I personally feel that if we had three supplementaries it would be better, but then I've got to listen, obviously, to what people who are in Parliament are currently saying.
I think there's two issues here. The one is that you need to get through as many questions as possible. On the other hand, you sometimes get very big questions being asked, and then three may be too few, because you're the first member to get an opportunity is the member who asked the question. That leaves only two other opportunities, which is hardly a cross-section of 15 parties. So from that perspective, I think stick with four. It doesn't mean you have to ask four, and that's a political management issue, that if you as a party don't specifically have a particular question to ask, rather don't ask one, then participate for the sake of participating. So it's a question maybe of discipline for party discipline.
Speaker, I would support that, because remember, we have said we changed the rules to be more compliant with the Constitution, and particularly Section 157, where it says that our rules must support a multi-party democracy and reflect opportunities for all parties to have an opportunity. I would be concerned if there are only three. It means the first is the member, and remember it's proportional, so the bigger parties will have the bipartisanry there. And then only two remaining ones. It will tend that, again, the bigger parties will dominate the supplementary section. So if you extend it to, if you keep the four, at least there's an opportunity for members for broader representation of
parties. Well, but you come in, also I want you to answer, because you have been telling me this question. Rather truly, is it not that the real issue that you want a member to have opportunity to do is to pose the main question, or the primary question? Is what really want your member to have enough time to do? A supplementary question really is almost supplementary from the main question that is posed. But I wouldn't have a problem if the opposition, broadly speaking, they want to deal with supplementary question, not with the main question. I think that's the fact. I thought that what you are trying to do is that you must have enough time to put your own question, not the question that is put for other persons. I thought that's the point that you are trying to avoid. But it seems you agree on that, because if Edith is putting a point, the minister answers, and you want to take much of your time following up to what the minister is answering on the question that is posed by you, don't forget that you apply your mind before you put a question. There's something that you want to achieve in your question, not in the supplementary question. Therefore, if you reduce the number of supplementary questions, it would allow you to pose your primary question. And it seems you don't take that route. I'm very happy that you don't take that route. I thought that's something that would benefit you more than just making supplementary question on a question that is posed. Because the main pose of a question anyway would never contact you. What was the main purpose for him and her to pose that question first and foremost? You may even take an opportunistic approach to make supplementary things, but you miss the point that you wanted to pose your own original question. Because that's what you want to achieve as a member of parliament. Four is fine, let us move on that.
Yes,
ma'am.
Okay, I just
wanted
to clarify.
Mr. Stephen was actually saying earlier on, the whole point was to learn to push the button fast. And that she's saying it's proportional. She's actually contradicting herself. Not on proportional.
Yeah.
Is it proportional?
No.
But original questions are obviously proportional.
Yes, but the supplementaries are not. That's the point I'm making.
No, but can I just explain why I'm saying that? I didn't say supplementaries are proportional. But what I do say, and the rule makes provision for the speaker, what often happens is you would go to the NA table and you would see that your member is there. But then the speaker has a right to say
but listen, there's not a broad representation of parties here. And the speaker can skip your member and actually select another member. So there is a sort of an effort to have a broader political perspective to the question session.
Okay.
Well,
I
was
first thinking of parties the first time that actually works.
For supplementary question, I think we agree on that. Can we proceed to sub rule five, the member whose name, I think that is five. I think it's almost normal on that. Sunday.
So we in tandem. If you look at number four, it says in respect of each question, four supplementary questions may be asked. Then number five says the member who posed the question or who takes charge of the question must be given the first opportunity to ask a supplementary question. Does that now mean plus one?
No.
Or is it included in the four?
No, it's included in the four.
But then if you read it, it doesn't quite say it that way. Maybe the two...
Is it possible to just elapse the second part into the first part and say four supplementaries or questions or allow the first to be to the person who wants the question?
Yes. Okay, we can make it clear about that. I think they would work it out. Six, there's no issue. Yes, what? Yes, for you, that is.
Just to go back to the point about the time limitations, I think we agreed that in the front of the president. So can we then have something in there that says that it does not apply?
Okay, that's a good question.
Chair, I was just about to talk to the issue of supplementaries making a statement or expressing an opinion. I'm not, practically it's not the purpose of a supplementary. It's more to elucidate the reply of the minister in terms of what he replied to or what he may have missed to say in the reply. Currently, I understand sometimes members make statements and ask no supplementaries. And like Lord Balfour said, as I quoted last week, nothing else but do make a calumnious attacks on individuals of this house. And I don't know if we want to go that route.
Yeah, we do. It's election time.
Chair, just to come from a different angle. It's often necessary when asking a supplementary to just briefly contextualize why you're asking what your supplementary is going to be. And I recall when this first came in that there would be points of order they can ask a question, and the member would say, I'm just trying to make it clear why I'm asking my follow-up question. And you know, if within the minute that the member has for a supplementary, they don't get their question in, the chair can stop them and say, sorry, you didn't ask a supplementary, there's nothing for the minister to answer. But I think to insist that it only be a question and that it cannot be part of a contextualization statement or comment as well would be a problem, Chair.
Three.
President, remember, we have said last week, we must be honest about question sessions in the House of Representatives. First of all, a member can have an opinion to express and state that, oh, sorry, Minister, but you didn't answer my question. It's a valid comment you make. And that's an opinion that you express. But secondly, you can have information that contradicts what the minister says. Because in a question for oral reply, you hardly pose a question for information. You actually want to know if the minister is aware of what is happening in his or her department. So actually you are... are trying to extract information to show that he or she is not sort of in control of that department adequately. So I would not suggest that we change anything about that. I think that's valid, that we retain it, and that members who don't manage their time effectively actually are embarrassed because they don't come to the posing of the supplementary and then they must just sit. And then the minister does not have to respond. So I think this, as it is, it's fine. Thank you.
Yeah, I just want to say, I haven't exactly sort of gone to sit and see how much of question period or question day is taken up by points of orders and rulings that the speaker has to make. And when you have a particular sensitive period of the annual, not the annual session, but of the term of parliament, then you probably have more points of orders that absolutely distract us from getting to the question. And I just think of an example in the Canadian Parliament, and I just want to read quickly what this member said. I've spoken with many MPs who feel that what is going on in question period is wrong, but they do not know how to change it. And one of the problems is with too many statements instead of questions, because that is what the question day is supposed to be.
Again, we come back to the fact that this is politics. And unfortunately, like it or not, that's the way politics goes. I mean, it's not just question time. It happens every day. And in fact, the only way you can get through some of these days in Parliament is to mess around and go to points of order and all sorts of other things. That is all part of politics, and I'm afraid it's not going to stop, and there's no way you're ever going to stop.
Just for the sake of interest, I want to just turn the argument around and say that considering that you've extended question time, and for the purposes of making question time more political, and just for point of debate, you could in fact allow the member asking a supplementary question, especially the one asking the first supplementary question, to speak for more than 1 minute, so they could speak for 2 minutes. Now that would take the emphasis potentially off the question, but it would allow for more political contestation. So it would in fact allow for more almost of a style of debate. So I'm not saying I favour that. I'm just saying that creates a different dynamic, which potentially makes question time more interesting.
Yeah. Yeah. Yes, sir. Okay. I just want to say we're fixing questions because other things are broken, and that's why, you know, if other things work, we don't have to make statements in questions, because questions are not about statements. We have Rule 105, and that permits members to make statements.
I think Mike must allow us to go ahead, because you can't ordinarily want to write up in detail how a human being must behave in the house. I mean, other human beings naturally are not easily just want to go to the discussion, they go around the table. You must give them that opportunity of going around the table, as long as it sticks to the time period that has been given. But if you want to write up the human beings behave in this way, they will definitely not behave in that way. Symbol is right, this is about politics, and it depends on the issue.
Chairperson, I think we have closed that issue. The only remaining issue is a possible consideration that you do not detract from the member who originally posed the question, and that you therefore make provision for extra time for 2 minutes supplementary. Because in all, Chair, I want to just go through this as we have it at present, and I don't suggest that we change it. But already, the balance of time is on the side of the executive. Yes, we want to hold them accountable, but this is the time for the legislative body to conduct its oversight. So if you calculate, at the top you have 5 minutes, and I must say the 5 minutes allocation is usually 10 minutes in practice. Then you have a supplementary, and you are restricted to 1 minute, even if it's your own question. You are restricted to pose an additional question and make a comment in 1 minute. So I would suggest that we consider the person who is posing the one who asked, who the author of the original question, be given 2 minutes to ask the supplementary, and the others to follow 1 minute each. so that we don't overall too long a period. I mean, if we then take 10 or 15 questions, it's going to take up another 15 minutes. But we will be able to process more questions, but allow the member who has done the original work to ask the more serious supplementary questions.
Okay.
I think it's fine to say in that way. Because you don't want also members of parliament to be bogged down on supplementary questions. You want them to pose their main question or their original question or their primary question. Because if we, in fact, it would be very nice as a minister for people to ask all supplementary questions, take time and then move on. But I thought that members did when they are posing oral questions, first they have a political motive. Because it's not a written question for information, it's a broadcast question that you are posing there. I thought that would be absolutely very useful for members to pose more broadcast questions if you want to make a house very vibrant. But it seems you are saying that no, there must be more supplementary questions, whatever time. He would never assist you to do exactly what you want to do. Because what you want to do is to allow members of parliament's question, their primary question, to be posed to ministers. And therefore, but if you are continued for supplementary questions, you are not going to do what I thought you wanted to do, general on that. Because I thought that's what you wanted to do. If Marina wants to pose a question, that day is very eager to pose a question, we want to allow her a space to pose that original question. But if you want to bog down, in fact, two questions anyway, with supplementary questions, takes almost 35 minutes in their house.
Can I perhaps just make one point, and that is that as a strategy, quite often members know the answer to the original question.
Yeah.
It is just an opportunity to ask follow-ups that they would not necessarily have approved by the questions office or speaker as the primary question. So it's often a means of addressing something else.
Yeah.
And so the answer to these, to the primary, is not always the main issue.
Yeah. Okay, let us proceed on that. And then I thought that if we accept this, there will be questions without notice to ministers. Hopefully the rules committee will accept that in parties. That could take care of the point that we have raised. And then, because otherwise, you want members to pose questions. Okay, let us proceed and 7, I think it's fine. They should do anything on such 7. And then 8 also, reply to the question is limited to 2 minutes. I think that is fine. And then unanswered question. What do you want us to do on that one?
Just before we go away from the times allotted and time limit, Chairperson, it's a very interesting suggestion that you've introduced last week about the questions without notice. I was actually thinking about it last night. How are we going to, because we will also have to allot a time period for that. We must just flag it here that if that is introduced, we will also have to make sure that we make provision for that in section 113. So that we say there will be a time allotted for questions, and you know, we will obviously have to think it through. How are we going to manage it, etc. But at least, you know, if we can take 30 minutes or 40 minutes or whatever, so that we can just make provision for the principle of that under time allocation of 113.
What do you want to do, really? Is to do exactly what we are doing when we are posing statements.
Yes.
You simply stand up there, the presiding officer notes you. Because that will allow speaker enough time to take the balance of parties in parliament.
Yes.
Because otherwise, again, if you come to proportional approach, you won't benefit anything, truly speaking. I thought that one to allow the presiding officer enough space to say, you stand up and say, Julie, take a point, and another one, the speaker can first decide, the general, who to appoint. It's far better, in fact. In fact, in other parliament, you can see, when the question time, without notice, everyone has stand up, then the speaker simply says, told them so, take this one. It's just a problem that we've got a habit, a list. Therefore, everything must be list approach. Everyone must follow this one, this one must follow this one. It just doesn't work with human beings that way. And then you want the flexibility for the leader of institution to be able to say, sometimes they take only one from the government party and 17 from the opposition. And they may take four, but you allow that space, in order to ask this question. Because anyway, a member of a government party asking a question will be a suitable question, generally. Because the breakfast is in the caucus of the party to ask questions. Because some of these is allowed for opposition, really, to pose the question that worries them about their constituencies. And then you can also say that those questions will be about constituencies. Just avoid again a person just raise the question about Syria. It's a very serious issue. But it should be issues around constituencies. The term by allowed time for constituency questions. Maybe we should phrase it that way. That's constituency question. Remember, stand up. Say, my constituency is a problem, means what is happening with this? Far better to do that. But I know that we are this type of approach, then we may want to follow a list again, proportional thing. I don't think sometimes it's very helpful for small parties, because you remain really almost not assisting you on that as well.
I want to just follow up with two issues. The first is when you say, specifically for constituency issues, would be in the nature of things matters of some detail. And it would be very unlikely that the minister would have answers immediately to hand. So they would have to be policy issues rather than constituency issues, I think. The other question is whether you'd be looking at supplementaries also for questions without notice, or whether it's just the question and the next question.
I think we have to ask a question and next question, because you will have your supplementary question somewhere else where it addresses. But the point that you want to do, you want to have a very vibrant activist partner. Where members stand up there, because some of the problem that is there, of course I know that we are using, generally speaking, the majority of people, not their mother tongue. And then we stand up there, we read. Generally, there's nothing really. You stand up there, we read, and we read. That's why, in fact, I think we're saying that, Elizabeth, sometimes it's boring. Because you are no longer there now to come in and read some chairs, and then we sleep. And the media is very interested just to take us when we are tired. When we are very vibrant, they don't take us back on that. But at the point that we should consider that as a option, really, not necessarily something that we must resolve ourselves. We may put it forward, if it is accepted as a principal point, then we can work out how it should work in terms of the organization. Okay.
Another question, what do you want to do on
this? Karen?
Speaker, okay, in terms of unanswered questions, what normally happens if a minister, if after the 3 hours or 2.5 hours allotted question time, we did not get to the other questions, then those ministers are expected in terms of the rule to submit the reply the next day at 12 o'clock. Now, on some occasions, and often it happens that it doesn't get replied to. And then it stands over. And then you have the problem that because you don't have regular question days, that question will never get onto the question paper again so that the minister can answer it. And so you need to devise a mechanism. I mean, currently the rules say that the question may not stand over more than once, more than twice. But the problem is, you must be able to do something in terms of the time that we schedule for question day so that the question gets replied to. And I have proposed a structure in terms of that joint standing committee that will be the NA rules committee now, but that is mainly with questions for written reply. It will require a more speedy process in terms of ministers that don't submit the replies after the question then.
But there's not one chance. I think we are clear on that.
Yeah.
And then
Michael, if I may. I've heard that on any question day, not more than about 9-10 questions are dealt with. And how many questions are there normally on the order paper? 25, 30? So how many of those 25 or 30 remaining ones do you get replies to by 12 o'clock the following day?
To be honest, at the moment there are 6 questions altogether for the year, standing over from previous question days. But the problem is that some of them are standing over for a long while now. Whereas after that question day, you had quite a few that were not provided, and so they came in later. They trickled in weeks or months later. Now we only have 6 remaining on the paper. Now the speaker does write to the executor, but he only writes to the executor in terms of written questions and in terms of questions that stand over more than once, oral replies, oral questions. Now, because those things don't stand over more than once, you don't get to the point where the speaker now has to write to the executor about them too. And that is the problem.
What
I propose that that the speaker should be writing in terms of those questions to the leader of government business and request those replies in terms of the rules.
I just wanted to ask. I seem to be really a disciplinarian, but somehow I want some measures, and I was wondering if we don't have other parliaments where they sort of, we said last week, shall we not move towards reports in the ATC, you know, every so often, be it at the end of a term or whatever, that we can just give an analysis of where the problem lies and which of the ministries we have a problem, clearly a problem. Because at this stage what we do is, if we want to get an overview of how many questions have not been answered, we must approach the questions office, etc. And I think it is important there must be transparency. If we are talking accountable parliament in terms of the constitution, transparency and all of those things, we will have to process a report every so regular, be it at the end of every month or whatever. And I'm saying we can talk about how often, so that we can just process this, and that in itself could become a measure that ministers would feel embarrassed about, that they are then exposed, so that the poor leader of government business is just doing, it's not doing the same thing, because the speaker writes to the leader of government business, wherever they are on the red carpet in the National Assembly, and then you must respond. And it seems to be very unfair. I think we need, if we want a debate on that, then we call for it. But at least there should be transparency and a formal tabling in the ATC of the sort of, what do you call it, truant minister.
Chair, in the Gauteng legislature, they have a rule provision in terms of which ministers that did not reply must come to the House and account and explain why they failed to reply.
Well,
okay. We should consider adopting that rule and then borrowing the cost and ensure that it works accordingly. And because what we want really is not to punish ministers. You want ministers to learn to answer your question, and then not to embarrass them, but really to answer the question. And then if they can't be able to answer the question because of many other reasons, they should be able to explain to the speaker. One way or another, the speaker may do that in the assembly. They can also write letters to the speaker, the reason why they are unable to answer the question. Talisa?
Earlier on, I wanted to comment on the 12 o'clock, the practicality of 12 o'clock the following day, that it was not practical in the past, and I don't think it will ever be practical. That we should come up with a way that says in the rules that if it's not answered because of the time allocation in the House,
then it should be answered with a, you know, in a, maybe within a day or two, and telling which we should take the route that Julian has suggested earlier on. Again, I think the Gauteng literature as well is a good example.
Thank you so much. I want to concur that the speaker has ultimate responsibility, and I would like to see him table a report, like a committee report, you know, so that we could also look at it, declare and debate the report. But while I'm on the floor, maybe I should also now put in something that I've been thinking about for a while. Where in this whole process does the speaker get asked questions? He is the final arbiter, but at the same time, there's no mechanism to question the speaker. And I know that there are other parliaments where such a process happens. And here I'd like to say, ask if it's possible to get some research done on this concept. I thought I heard it when Karen was talking about the House of Commons report, but I may be mistaken about the exact country. But yes, thought, and I'd like it to be considered seriously.
I think of this question of, you get through 9 questions on question day. All the ministers to whom questions are being put for that day are assumed to have their replies with them. So that if you get through 20 questions, you get 20 replies. And the idea really was that the ministers, as they leave the chamber, dump it on the table and say, there's my reply. So I'm not even sure why it was ever extended to 12 o'clock the following day, because that opens a door which is now leading to, you're suggesting, even longer. So, you know, I don't even know why 12 o'clock the following day is an issue. If they should simply have to be required to table their replies at the end of the question session. They can do it while they leave the chamber. There was the other thing,
sir.
Yeah.
Put your red files on the table.
The other thing was the point Ms. Scullion raises. This is specifically questions to the executive. The questions to the speaker would be an internal process and should not be part of a question session in that regard. But I think what the concern, my personal view would be, that there are all these internal forums in which members engage with the speaker and with the executive of parliament. And those are really the forums where those sort of things should be sorted out. To start asking questions in the house of the speaker may be a problem in terms of, you may want to do it in cases of extreme problems, where the speaker is failing to account, where the speaker has, when the house takes decisions, the speaker is required to implement, to communicate, etc. So if the speaker is refusing to do that, you've got a different kind of problem. But for asking questions how much money has been spent on A, B or C, that really is stuff which I think belongs in internal structures. That's why all parties are meant to be part of internal structures, and that kind of engagement I think would need to happen there. But if you want to ask questions to the speaker, you know, you could do that.
Thank you. Look, I know that there's an opportunity in the budget debate vote to ask questions to the speaker. But if you look at the government's model of parliament, the POA, it's limited only to certain individuals. Everybody doesn't get to be there. And again, because it's a closed meeting, you can't enter or you can't ask questions. The internal forums that are there are, I don't think have as much clout as asking a question of the speaker in the house. But I would still like to see what research is available on the topic before, you know, we take it further.
More work, more research, then they come back to research.
Thank you, sir. I think on the issue of unanswered questions, I mean the questions that don't get answered by a certain within a certain time. I think the same problem arises with questions for written reply, generally, and also occasionally and in different contexts, the nature of replies to say oral questions. My personal view is that there should be a rule that says that the rules committee should be responsible for a monitoring system for questions. A very general rule that obligates the rules committee to put in place a system for monitoring replies to questions. How it goes about that and how the specifics would obviously have to be worked out. I think it's a fairly complex area. Whether, for example, it would delegate that kind of function to a subcommittee, or whether that would involve the speaker and to what degree, those things would have to be worked out in detail. But I think the rule should be there, because that, as I said, would create a responsibility, a specific responsibility. And then there would be an obligation for a system to be created.
Okay, did that comment on the
I think Bevan's raising a... What do you want us to do? I want to take up the point that Mr. Hundick was making earlier about questions being handed, or in fact responses to questions being virtually placed on the table that day. It's not always wise to erase what used to happen in Parliament before 1994, but there was a system, and I'm sure this is what Mr. Hundick was referring to, that really did work very well. Because on question day, when you got to your office, after questions had been asked, or answered I should say, in your pigeonhole were the answers to your questions, whether they had been answered in the House or not. In other words, those that were not answered, the answers were in your pigeonhole. It was a simultaneous thing on question day. And it was wonderful from an MP's point of view, because it enabled you then to respond to the media straight away. It was enabled you to respond to your constituents straight away. It was really the right way to go. And if we could reintroduce something like that, where not at 12 o'clock the next day or any other day, on the day on which questions are answered, the answers to all questions will be with the member on that same day. It was a system that really did work superbly in this very important area of parliamentary life.
Just coming back to the issue of the speaker and questions from the speaker, I would agree that the POA is not the correct forum. But if the rules committee were to be looked at, you know, I hear what Sandy was saying, that a lot of these, all these internal committees are not represented by everybody. You know, that you've only got a few. But at least in the rules committee, you've got a substantially greater number than the POA. And it is an open forum, so it's a forum where the speaker can be held accountable. So it comes back to the members hearing what's going on, etc. So I just want to add my point of view is that that is the forum in which, if any question should be asked of the speaker, it should be asked in the National Assembly, National Rules Committee. National Assembly.
Jefferson, thank you. As far as speakers concerned, I think Sybil has covered me on that. As far as the issue is concerned with regards to what is the mechanism that we're going to introduce. Okay, first of all, just there is no excuse why the questions are not available immediately. And I don't think we should extend it to 12 o'clock the next day. We should say at the close of business or whatever, or the close of session of that particular day. And then I also wanted to query the sub A question, but we got it as standing over. Because unless the minister on the day specifies the reason why this one must be held back, we must not allow just for a sort of a standover. I don't think we should allow that, because we must ensure by now, 20 years into our democracy, we will not see the capacity to respond to the nationalism. So I just wanted to query that as well. And then I wanted to ask, just lastly, the mechanism that Theron has suggested. It's all good and well to say that you park that with the Rules Committee. I'm concerned the Rules Committee is going to be, well, you know, if there's some other subcommittee or whatever, monitoring committee. I'm concerned. I think the best office to handle this is the Questions Office. And it must just be a matter of procedure. At a particular time, at the end of the month, there's a report and it's tabled and it's finished and closed. So that the minute that that is kicking in automatically, it couldn't be that it is delayed because the task team or the monitoring mechanism couldn't come together. And this, you know, it's just a sort of a procedural matter. Unless we have that, the whole notion of transparency falls flat and we will not be complying with Section 55 of the Constitution, which stipulates that we have to provide for mechanisms to hold the executive accountable and to maintain oversight. It's it. So I just wanted to suggest that we just go for a very simple procedure of how to deal with this matter. And it's ACC that is all over and out.
Sorry, so I just wanted to add more for information sake, to add to what Mr. Ellis said, that in addition to the copies being available to members, and one doesn't need to write this into the rules, it could be part of the operational thing. We constantly worry about the relevance of the House, the minute it's coming to the House to account, and the immediacy or the immediate availability of information. Copies of those replies were also given to the media in Parliament. Yes. So they could immediately report on the answers that the minister had given. So it just makes the whole process more dynamic. It makes questions more dynamic, the fact that it's available on the same day that questions were answered, were asked and answered on that day.
Okay, just to come back to the issue of that Ms. Killian was proposing, that you have a report emanating from the Questions Office once a month, I would suggest that it be assigned to as a responsibility of the Speaker,
yes,
and not Secretary of the Questions Office,
no,
that the Speaker should report maybe not once a month, but maybe once a term, once a quarter, in other words. And that could be ATC, but I think more effective maybe is that you could ATC, but you could also that the Speaker must present it, submit it to the Rules Committee, which is an open process, and that would enable an engagement with the problems that may have arisen. And if you look at the UK, I read that whole entire thing, I was fascinated, the verbatim engagement with the ministers, and what they call the yes minister type of replies they were getting. But interestingly, that structure engaged with the worst performing minister, specifically about the quality of replies. And the mechanism they've got here is that any member can complain about the quality of a reply received from a minister. So it's not just whether they reply, but the quality of the reply. And then there was presumably an official structure supporting this, the UK committee, which would look at the nature of the reply, see whether there was any grounds for the member complaining, and half of those would be rejected as not, you actually don't agree with the answer, you don't like the answer, that's why you're complaining, and they would be chucked out. But those where specific information had been required, and in the answer specific information was not given, on those cases this structure would then engage with the ministry on behalf of the member and the institution, to say this was what was asked for, you did not give this a substantive information, please assist. But that's going one step further, that is looking at the quality of replies. But I think, you know, either the Rules Committee or it could set up a subcommittee to monitor and engage with the executive on late replies, those departments that are consistently failing to reply or that are replying poorly.
Yeah,
I saw that we have already agreed that the Speaker is the main man. How you create subcommittees and how delegate the responsibility should not be something that you want to hold on here. But we also share the rules. After you have heard what you have said, you have expressed the views in the rules, you must then ask even the question people to take responsibility of whatever they wouldn't want to prescribe it from this particular forum. I thought that approach was taken earlier.
Chair, I was also thinking of the, a very frustrating thing that maybe for ministers if, to suggest is maybe that ministers that do not submit those replies to questions after the question a long time has been arrived at, that those questions then get either transferred to the next question day and you add an additional 50 minutes. I don't know if those ministers may be...
Hey, you know, Mike, we want to develop people. We want to make people speak. These things of yours are not like you. You know, they make people... You want Parliament to become a comfortable zone for ministers. It's not working. I mean, the reality is these are human beings. They must be able to be tested for them to be able to stand on their own two feet and answer questions. If you can't, let's get them an explanation somewhere. Also, we don't want to develop people who are going to be dummies of some people. We want people to be human beings to answer for themselves. This comfortability you are constantly trying to work up for executives is not working. I mean, it's not working, it's just killing human beings. It's a natural thing that... No, please, just leave them alone, man. We'll sort them out. Yes.
My mind is very clear. He's trying to make sure that things work in Parliament. It would be unfair raising of issues with him. Is making a contribution in a broader meeting, I think it's cautious. Okay. Now, colleagues, I think we will take the view, though, that it is the speaker that is responsible at the end of the day of the running of Parliament. Even ministers are come to Parliament, but it's through the office of the speaker, through the speaker. And then the speaker, then you must set up mechanisms to ensure that you are able to really have the explanation if questions are not being replied to. Because otherwise we'll try to design a system for the speaker. I don't think we should do so. I think we should agree generally in broad terms what we need the ministers to do. I think we accept this thing of 12 the following day seems that's well. Because when a minister comes, of course all ministers come anticipating that all their questions are going to be answered that day. So did they come there well prepared for that day? But they know deep down in their mind anyway that only takes 6 questions is gone. Therefore there will be a large number of ministers who simply come because they look at the question paper and then say, my question is somewhere there. And then said, no, I'll go there but I'll wait, and I know that they will never, the time don't allow that. Then I can, that's a real possibility there. And then if you want them to account, I think the idea that as they leave, after that question paper time as a fire, they should just deposit the answers to that particular area. Whatever area, I think the speaker can design an area where there's a leaf, a sharp rate deposited there, and then the unit NIAM is able to take that, and then they give it to members. I think that could work, really. I don't think we should risk it forever on this one. Yes, ma'am.
I just want to clarify on what you just said, what Mrs. Killian said earlier on. 1142 will then be amended, and that should then be the questions not received on the same day will then be considered unanswered, not standing over, but unanswered. No, so we can have unanswered then.
Unanswered questions.
Unanswered questions.
Because of time limitation.
Because ministers are refusing to answer. It's just 3 hours that is set aside, and then after 3 hours, those questions that are not answered will be deposited automatically to whatever area. Yeah, that's what you want to do.
And those who are not deposited are
unanswered.
Correct.
That is it.
Therefore, there are no answers. Therefore, other processes then can kick in, and then we can run that. Yes.
Just a practical
system would be for somebody from the questions office to stand at the door to the chamber together with the sergeant at arms with his mess raised. And stop any minister from leaving without
that one can be considered as we move on and developing our rules further. But it would be difficult though, Marina, to have a system like that. Yes, ma'am.
I just want to speak to one thing in mind when we talk about these things, that when it comes to the quality of replies, because it's such a sensitive issue on all sides, the people asking the questions, ministers maybe not wanting to respond in a particular way, that has to be the people who eventually decide about whether it was good quality or not, or whether it was good enough, has to be a political thing. It has to be the politicians. And it can be a technical committee, like the scrutiny committee, where they get advice, and they don't have to go through all the questions themselves. They'll be advised by the officials, and but they will have to make the decision to engage with the ministers.
I just guess that we are not really going for quality question approach at the moment.
No.
It's not what we are proposing. We are proposing that ministers must answer the question. If they don't answer the question at the end of the sitting for question day, they must deposit them. Whoever is going to be collecting them, those that are not deposited, they will be regarded as unanswered questions. And then we can then regard some processes that will work. Maybe you should consider this monitoring team, but the Rules Committee must really look at it seriously on that. Because equality of question, that would be a real discussion to other people. Because the political issue, you will then know, even answer your quality is low, say, hey, this is what I know about what I was answering, can become very subjective from it. I think what we want to do, the rules must be objective. But the purpose of the rule is to make sure that Parliament works and Parliament ensure that those who come to Parliament must account. We don't want to do other things that would be very subjective. You need justice so-and-so to come in and judge whether it's a good quality or not a good quality. But at the moment, I think we are building the accountability program. So generally, I think we'll reach that stage, you know, where there's a team somewhere that look at this and they can say, but this question, Minister, is we're just the malicious compliance. We had no intention to give information to this member. That will happen as we move on. But I think at the moment we want to enhance the accountability and for the ministers. Okay.
Yeah, let us proceed for this one. Some three, I think, is fine. Yes. Marina? Some three, one month or is fine. Marina, it's not that if you are going to be a judge, you can
that's when they are asking permission, people stand over.
Maybe what one shall say then is that the request for a question to stand over may not be more than once. Because you have two categories of questions standing over.
Questions not replied to after the allotted time, and questions that the speaker has said because the minister is not present in the house, and that question stands over.
Even if a minister not being able to answer a question, may only stand over.
Okay.
not being in the house and having a farm.
Yeah.
Having a
farm.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yes. We sometimes get interested. Sorry, Mr. I'm just thinking. We sometimes get interested in the house where a minister does not let the speaker know that he or she is not available and that the deputy is not available, and then suddenly the majority of the books are sitting there going, "Oh my goodness." Mm. So, what happens in cases like, because people then get put in a very precarious position and they have to say, well, it appears that the minister is not available, this question will then, what happens to that? Does that then go down as an unanswered question?
Okay, the rule makes provision for that. In terms of 115, if the member so requests, then the question can stand over to the next question day, which means it will be out of cluster and that minister must come based on the discussion between the chair and the speaker.
That's
if a member.
So a member asks a question.
119, please.
Yeah.
Yeah, sorry, that's
if a minister is not right, yeah.
But then the only person on the line will ask a question for you. We have a sub-three, okay? Question for all of
us. Okay, then may.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. All right, we're talking about two kinds of standing over. The one is where the minister gets up in the house, question is announced. Minister gets up in the house and says, Mr. Speaker, I request that the reply to the question stand over.
Yeah.
And there may be a reason, and the reason it may be necessary for the minister to give a reason, I'm not sure. And there can be no objection to that. It means the minister hasn't got the request, the reply ready for whatever good reason. In that case, the question stands over until the next time that cluster comes before the House.
Yeah.
Am I correct?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. And such a question may not stand over more than once.
Yeah.
Now you get a situation where a minister and his or her deputy is simply absent without any explanation given. Then you're saying, if I'm correct, that the question is not standing over but is unanswered.
Okay.
Is that correct?
Yeah.
And then there's a genuine request by a minister in their house. Of course, under normal circumstances, a person will state the reason why things should be. But I think we are taking that one out. And then they request the speaker, whoever is presiding agrees. But there are people who are not in the house, in general, no one can account for that. Those questions will be unanswered questions. And then the standover is unanswered question. Yes, ma'am.
But then we just need to make rule 109 to sub-3 clear, because it says if a minister is absent on the day, but it doesn't say absent with permission or absent without giving a reason.
It actually doesn't matter whether it's absent with or without, or even if he asks for the question to stand over. It is a mechanism that the member has, that because the minister is now not responding to the question, in terms of 109.3, the question stands over till the next question day out of cluster.
Yeah.
And so you can use it irrespective.
But Mr. Hungry is talking about a question, if a minister is absent with legitimate reason, or asked legitimately for a question to stand over until he has a reply responsible, that stands over until the next cluster.
But say, I say it's the member's prerogative, because this is these options we to use in terms of the rules.
Yeah.
Whether you use it or not.
Yeah, that's the members of the prerogative, not the
minister. Mm. Of course, well, you would know that the 90, I think I will be fighting on this, about 90% of members don't know the rules.
Yeah.
If you assume that the members of parliament, they know the rules, then you apply your rules, I think we are expecting a lot. That's why we wanted to treat the rules committee, generally speaking, to ensure that the ministers' accounts, and then those who don't account, there are some mechanisms that are put in place for them to account. And of course, we are trying to be reasonable too. When a minister is not there for real reason, of course, if valid reason is acceptable, that one can send over, number one. And then another one would be a minister really is there in the city. And then time allotted expires, generally the minister then deposits it to you, then you see what you want to do with those answers. And the minister is not there at all, no one knows where the minister is. Maybe the minister is overseas anyway, president has given a right to go, but the starting office didn't notify anyone. And there's no equipment, there's no one. And then those questions regarded as unanswered questions. And then the unanswered question simply means that they'll go through a process where the speaker or the ruler, whatever structure that you are setting up, will then follow up just to ensure that they've answered some of this question. And that's what we are trying to do. Marina, that's fine?
Yeah, it's obviously make the distinction between the different absolutes and the different reasons. I think we just need to make it clear in the rules, because at the moment there's dubiousness or ambiguity. Is this correct?
And the first question, in terms of what we've just said, when it comes to unanswered questions, the way you said a question is unanswered because the minister wasn't there. We said he's not pitched with our provision. Okay. That we make then mention in 114 of the member's right to insist that that question be answered in the next question day. In other words, if this is a member's prerogative, we're going to show it as an unanswered question, but in terms of 109.3, the member still will have the right to insist that they go on the question paper for the next, if the member so wishes.
Mm.
Maybe that's what we need to do.
But it goes hand in hand with the speaker consulting with the leader of dumb business about whether the minister will be available. So there's some reasonableness in terms of the rule.
All I'm just saying is that we must make the difference to the members' rights, even though it's
shown as an unanswered question.
I think that's a useful way of keeping a record available to all members on the question paper. They can see each question that has not been answered or that's effectively unanswered. It's endorsed to that effect on the question paper and it remains on the question paper.
Okay. I think I'm bringing up a problem again. I'm trying to find clarity. You know, we've now said these are the unanswered questions, the ones that go down with the ministers, absolutely not reason or whatever. At what point do we break off for a member being allowed to use 109 sub 3? Obviously, it makes sense that if you have unanswered questions that have been unanswered for since March or something, it would not make sense for this rule now to kick in for a member sudden to realize, oh God, I've got this right in terms of this rule to put it on for the next question there out of cluster. Would that be appropriate for something from March to then go in September or something? Or do you have is it only until the next question day?
Only until the next question.
Yeah. That's how we also register. I also thought that because the relevance is then the member has to be immediately aware that this does serve unanswered, so I must ask for it to be put on if I want it on.
Actually puts the responsibility on the ministers to get their questions answered, but it also doesn't give ministers an easy way out of not answering a question.
It does. Take a point though, Sybil. Every rule that we are trying to retract or re-endorse or reconfirm should be fit to the purpose.
Yes,
and then the overall purpose is clear accountability of members of the legislative to Parliament. First, the Parliament and themselves who are deployed at the executive. And that they must account, and they must account sufficiently, really. So I'm not sure how to be sufficient approach, but sufficient simply means that we must be happy as members of Parliament that our ministers are accounting, they're able to answer our question, oral question, written question, all other questions on that. Then whatever we design as mechanism of doing that should be in line, of course, that should be reasonable, and but not necessarily compromising the stature of Parliament.
Right.
To hold everyone to account. I think that's the point that earlier on Fran was raising about the bigger issues, and I think we have answered that, the rules there is there. I've never seen them asking any question to the rules on some of the accountability of structures that are designed to facilitate their work. But I think the point that we are trying to do, that every rule that we are putting, we must be able to justify both politically and administratively why we are putting this rule. And then is it fit to the purpose it's meant to do? Otherwise, it can be just a repetition of all the rules. And then every rule that we are putting in must really stand the test of time, ourselves, if it to argue for it convincingly. Because if Enver Suti comes in, he knows the rules, he likes the rules, And he said, but this rule is irrelevant, really. You guys didn't know what you are doing here. This can't work because of 1, 2, 3, 4. And ourselves, we have drafted something with such a man. We didn't see whether we are right on this thing or not. I think it would be a very bizarre situation. That is why whatever we are doing ourselves, we must know, all of us, how to justify. Even in caucuses, because it's a very sad story. You go to a caucus, one member, why she stand up and say, what is this all about? You are limiting our right to ask a question, and we start saying, I was forced by the committee. In fact, I didn't agree with this thing. I think this committee forced me. Instead of justifying the logic and the rationale why we arrived at that decision. Because it's very possible, and the army says, no, I was not in the meeting that day when this matter was discussed. And the politicians are very flexible people. They are very flexible people. It depends on the weather. If the weather is correct, they can stand for things. When they think that, no, I can't make it, and others must carry the blame. And then I didn't know this thing, and Julie, Tell comes there. Of course, I'm not sure if you are winning the court today or not.
You're
going to
see him on fire.
Oh, he's a president now. Endorsed by court. Not by the member. It's a dicey situation. But we are not there. But the point though that let us proceed and deal with the inner issue. That's a nice way of putting things. Now we are taking charge now. And then I think first of all we are fine with it really. We clarify it even there. My turn.
Okay. 1093 has no interest in whether ministers submitted a letter to apologize for actions or not. I don't know why, whether we are or why we want to make that distinction in terms of absences. If we are making the distinction, it has no real significance in terms of 1093.
No, that's fine. Can we please ask if you look at it?
May I ask you to clarify, how does it have no relevance? Because we've just made a distinction now that if a minister is absent without apology, then your question is regarded as unanswered. But if you have a valid reason, then it stands over.
Am I missing something?
Yeah,
I am. Okay, then yeah. I think the right lies with the member. So whether the minister has a valid reason or not, the member has the right to ask that it goes to be a question to stand over.
I think what we are talking about are unanswered, are those ones after the allotted time, and the replies are not submitted. They are unanswered, and of them we submit the report to the speaker.
Also
saying that the minister who's not in the hospital and is supposed to answer the question and he's not there without a reason, also goes unanswered question, so that will also go in your report.
Well done.
If you don't have a reply to the question,
say
it goes there. It's unanswered.
It's unanswered.
It's unanswered.
Okay. Yes?
So can we make that unanswered and qualified as a subject to 109, subject to the right for the member to ask that it stand over? Because look, if that member's question is now going to be unanswered, and that member feels so such an important question for you to have to put it on the paper again when it eventually comes up, this member has the right to put that question on the question paper regardless if that cluster is there or not. So, that right is in the members to use, and so we say it will be unanswered subject to Rule 109.
Can I just ask something?
Sorry,
just to follow up with Zainab's. I'm just for clarity in my mind. Maybe I'm just going to talk because of all the mess.
I have to
blame
the mess.
The
In other words, are we also saying that if a minister legitimately asks for a question to stand over, we've said that that will stand over until the next cluster of that minister comes up. So that this question will then also give him, where a minister has legitimately asked for something to stand over, that the member can request for it to actually come up the next week.
Okay.
You see, that's where...
Chair, 190 remains irrespective of the minister asking the question to stand over. The minister is not present and does not submit an apology. The minister is present in the house, or the minister is not present and submits an apology. Now what happens at the end, 1093 you will only be able to use during the question hour. You come to the minister, the minister is not there, the speaker says the minister tenders an apology. The members say, in terms of 1093, speaker, I request my question to stand over until the next question day. And which means that that question is out of touch and 30 minutes being added. That is the member's right. Now at the end of question time, you come to a number of questions that were not arrived at due to the time allotted as now expired. Those questions must be submitted in terms of the new provision immediately, the written reply. If they are not submitted, they are now unanswered. 1093 does not arise. It's a right arising in the house.
Where does it say that in the rule?
It doesn't say it in the rule, but it follows automatically. You can...
Okay. No. I think it's very good. It's clarifying many things. And they don't forget that this is not the end of your process. As you redraft it again, I think that's when the team, they will relook at some of the issues. Just to clarify it, make it easier for people to understand it better. And I thought that is a consequential issue, really, that we are raising. And therefore, we should really stick to that. Okay. Julie, let us pass.
Okay. Well, what I wanted to say was that if you read it, then it is clear it is in the house.
In the process.
In the house that this is taking place. So that if the minister is absent,
of course, members.
We have had.
Okay, let us proceed, friend. I think we are happy now with written questions.
Happy.
Part three, written questions. What do you want to say on this part? 116.
Yeah, I was just thinking in terms of sub 1 that we make provision for in accordance with the schedule of business by the program committee. A question for written reply may be placed on the paper in accordance with the scheduling of business by the program committee. Because currently, how does it work at the moment?
The problem is we have a practice, and in terms of the practice, when there is a committee week, although we have now moved away from that to every working day of Parliament, on a Tuesday then it is the deadline for submission of written questions, and on a Friday they appear. We therefore nowhere in the rules specify when those questions will appear, and I just saw that. It may help if we say in terms of the schedule of the program committee, in accordance with the schedule of business by the program committee, unless we specify it more clearly.
Just remember, we debated this issue last week. We said, irrespective of the business of the house, whether the house is sitting, whether the committees are sitting, members must be able to submit questions. So even there where you are in your constituency, you find something wrong, you are there, you focus, you want to compile a question, you want to electronically submit it. So I don't want to go there in accordance with the scheduling of the program and the committee.
Okay.
Members must be able to submit on any working day.
That's
different from the sitting day.
But the motivation though was that the executive doesn't call for what we call constituency period. They work almost every working day. And therefore, because answers are from the executive,
yeah,
wherever members are, if they put questionnaires there, she must be able to answer those questions. And I thought that's what the point that we were raising earlier on. Of course, it's one thing that if you want members to do so, of course, members will have their constituency week or that. They can't answer questions in their constituency week. But because they're executive anyway, there's no constituency week in the executive. They can do that as parties, but they're aware that the cabinet sit down and say, now, is a 2 weeks constituency week. Stop everything. It doesn't work that way. Therefore, the executive machinery works day and night. They must be able to answer those questions. I think that was the point really that was said at the time when we were having this discussion as well.
I think what I then need clarity on is if members, and we've said this, members can submit a question for a written reply on any working day. The issue is when the questions office receives that question, is the office required to print a question paper every day? And what the office can do is immediately supply a copy of that question to the department. But the notice period for replies to written questions is it 10 days, Michael? 10 working days. How many working days are for written questions?
We normally publish them on a Thursday and they appear on a Friday. So from Tuesday, members submit, and on a Friday they appear on the question paper.
If that Monday is a question day, is a constituency day, and Ms. Gillian sends you electronically a question for written reply on the Monday, that will go on the question paper on the Thursday, is what you're saying?
Yes, for Friday, or Friday paper.
It will be important for you, even if after we are through, just to deal with the technicalities in terms of your mechanism. And then because the principal point that a member of parliament must be able to put question or written question whatever day of the working day. Because the executive doesn't close anyway, their offices are always operating there. Therefore, you see what mechanism you put in place for you to put the question, give answers, all that. I think we must work it out really fast. You know it better than the team as a whole here. I don't think we should ourselves try to deal with it in detail. Okay. A question for written reply may not contain more than 15 subdivisions. It's fine. Yes, there are too many.
In terms of the practice as it has evolved in the questions office, we have always tried to keep it to 5 subdivisions. And if it goes over that, you normally find the question starts to acquire a whole lot of other side issues. And for it just to be a focused question, it's best just to keep it at 5 paragraphs.
Can we negotiate?
Yeah.
Jefferson, I would like to negotiate for 10. I would like to negotiate for 10, and for very practical reasons. I found that when you compile a question, then you always try to identify where can the executive perhaps jump out of a reply to the question. So that if you tighten it, sort of, you close the loopholes, it makes it less likely that they will be able to sidestep the question. So if we can settle it on 10, I'm sure we can
do it. Well, not more than 10, there may be 5, maybe 6, maybe 2, that'll be 5. Yeah.
Sure.
If anyone has a question, we have a question. We made a very fun question, so many stuff.
Can I say, for example, I just want to use an example where a particular question was put to a minister with regard to the social development minister on the implementation of a number of acts, Child Act, etc. And this minister had to request a member if the question can't come to her in terms of each act separately because it's different departments dealing with it. Now that's one example, but there are also other examples where the longer the question becomes, the less focused it becomes in terms of it requires not just one central idea, and if it requires us then to edit it and then, it should have one single idea, because once it acquires more than one single idea, it's different divisions of the ministry that's dealing with it. And that's why I just asked
the idea, I think, from 15 to 10, I think editing comes to you. And it was a very true question in a way, Michael, that's made it up to you. But the point that you have said, I think question is not a true plan. Maybe the question of general ability, tell specific question, maybe it's just informational. I think for 15 to 10, I think it has to be with that for the kind of thing. Of course, you may find people as they master the art of writing questions, you may end up with very true self-tradition. And then it could give you to educate lots of things there. I think we should put that out.
Okay.
And the reason flies, maybe this is the same question.
No, no, it's fine.
It's fine. Yes, it's fine now.
Oh.
Grab it, please.
No, I think that's fine.
Are we fine now?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
For the switching is called by that root print, does not apply to question referred to that. Same question. One. Do you think that you must have one question forever? No.
Coming in, sir?
No, that's the resuscitation of question.
My understanding is 108.8, the reference there is to questions that exceeded the number of questions that can be accommodated on the question day. So those excess questions in terms of quotas become questions to written reply.
Oral question, they only get up to a maximum of 10.
Yeah.
All those questions in excess of 10, that becomes, in terms of 108.8, written questions. So it means that the student can have three questions that she submitted, but because she had also submitted an oral question that is no longer an oral reply, she can have four written questions. That's what it means.
It covers numbers, right?
Yeah. So they don't lose the question.
The question remains
there. And 1165, Chair, I just suggest that in terms of this being sort of fine-tuned in order to be appropriate to written questions. Because as it says, it's exactly a repeat of 1154, which are about oral questions.
You want to interrupt
me? Well, he's making it a little bit
simpler. I basically propose that if a question for it, and this being said, for written reply has not been replied to within 10 working days, and then this I delete, standing over is not answered either orally or in terms of rule 1141, that portion gets deleted, to read, if a question for written reply has not been replied to within 10 working days, the internal question paper must be endorsed to the effect that the question has not been replied to.
The mechanism should report to the House at a given moment with recommendations, and whatever recommendations may be appropriate in the particular case, the recommendation is made to the House approves, and then under the authority of the House there is a follow up with the relevant minister. It may be to invite the minister to come before the House to explain, it may be something else.
Just wanted to say, we also discussed this a little earlier. I think we do have to differentiate between the response, the fact that the minister has responded, and maybe inferior quality of the content of the reply. And the quality is sometimes very difficult. I mean, that is when, you know, when you go into the House of Commons sort of issues. So I would not like us to confuse the mere fact that the minister and the department understand that they have constitutional obligation to account to us. The fact that they are responding. You can argue about the quality of, you know, this the minister. You can take the minister on politically. Say, either the minister doesn't know what is happening or whatever. But the point is that we must not allow this situation to become so complex that we are not able to process a report on poor performance in terms of response time and respect for the institution of Parliament. I would like to differentiate. I mean, earlier we said the speaker effectively is the National Assembly table that will compile a report on oral questions. The same should apply to written questions. Then we can have a monitoring mechanism in the rules, a task team or whatever, to say, you know, let's now a second phase of improving our accountability is going to be so that there's a political committee overseeing quality. That is not an administrative role. That is a political committee, like we said earlier. So again, yeah, can we perhaps make provision for that sort of exposure of lack of understanding and the respect for the institution of Parliament. So that is published regularly, you know, we can decide monthly or whatever, but it's published, it's open, it's, you know, and it could become a matter of public debate. And then secondly, we can look at mechanisms to improve the quality.
Okay, so just bear in mind though
that as you are drafting the rules, we had no intention to be punitive to anyone. We want the rule to facilitate the work of Parliament in terms of the Constitution. We have no interest to embarrass any member. It's just a member must work according to the rules. That's the point that we are raising. We should not sound to, I think, to ministers as if, you know, these rules just to deal with them. Because the likelihood for them to reject things is very high. And then to say, no, this one is punitive. It's not really. What you want them to do, enhance the process of mechanism for them to accompany us, they agree on that. And then if they fail to do that, of course, there must be consequences. And then how do we then design the mechanics of that, I think is true. It's a political leadership who should then apply his mind on that. But I thought that the rules, really, generally, the main purpose is to facilitate the work of members of Parliament, to do their parliamentary work as encapsulated in the Constitution. This is what we want to do. And then all other issues really is just to ensure that everyone accounts and do some work. And you wanted to make a point?
You see, Chair, if you look at the DRR process now, and you look at performance, you know, it's something that is now beginning to enter the system. So it's not going to be subjectively about the minister. It's about how do we improve. You know, if we didn't do this DRR system, we wouldn't be able to detect that standards also in the AG are beginning to deteriorate in the manner they're giving answers and in the manner they're beginning to talk to issues that they're getting to. What in general be why they're beginning to say there's leadership problem, there's governance problem. It's a very wide thing. And I've observed it in two or three committees I've registered, and that it's just beginning to indicate whether there is going to be a problem within the AG. Now, I'm just saying that that performance is something that we should always keep injecting into the system. So let's not be wary to raise it within our system here, that we do expect, there should be expectation from society that we as elected people are being expected to perform. And somebody must audit our performance, and we are putting it back to the authority that the institution must be able to find you and find the reason that why are you not able to do your work. You must understand we spend money on the first day of arrival of members of Parliament, huge money, and there's no outcomes and there's no assessment of those little bit of work that we are trying to do in behalf of society that we give in members to be able to find it, that it's important to be a member of Parliament and there's expectations, there are rules. So for me, it would be nice to put it into the system level. Let's find performance even amongst ourselves. Let's not leave it to the party, because in the party, it's comfortable. We'll give it politically. But the institution itself must be able to raise a question and raise a flashlight that is easier to be difficult to understand. What qualities are there? I'm not sure.
I'm going to make a list of that.
Okay.
Thanks. If I recall correctly, the oversight office was adopted by the House, both Houses in fact, extended the 10 working days. The responsible cabinet minister not replied right to the question, but then 10 working days to 21. I'm not sure why I say 21, presumably that's 3 weeks. So that's something which effectively became an order of the House, and which I suppose the task team must give some consideration to. I would think that 10 days may be too little. I haven't been exposed to too many questions, but it may be that sometimes questions require quite a lot of detail. And if, for example, the department has to go and do research, gathering data from provincial, local governments, wherever, 10 days may be too little to compile a report. I don't know, Michael, whether there are criteria for written questions, because I could imagine that, especially with something like 15 subdivisions, a member could solicit, a huge report from a department. How is that politically managed? Is the minister, what is to prevent... it's not a question of prevention, but does the minister simply have to exercise discretion in respect of how long and how much time the department's going to spend on doing research and answering a particular question? Because, the department could spend a huge amount of time researching and going to conduct studies to answer a particular question.
I can recall something in the housing legislature where we actually provided an opportunity for a minister to ask for extension because of the nature of the question. And I think that would help, because rather let them ask for, we could provide for a period of extra X number of working days for an extension. At least then there is accountability in the mere fact that there is a responsibility taken that they must answer the question. Because in some cases, Perrin is quite correct. It demands sort of further probing from institutions. Some of the state-owned entities reporting to the partner. The only mechanism that we have is to engage and to get feedback is from the minister, but that minister must get the information from the institution. So maybe we should do that. In principle, I believe we should retain sub 1 and sub 2. But I do believe that we must make provision somewhere. Maybe it could be an extra provision that we make here, is that the minister could request the speaker for an extension once only. And then if we can determine how long, and thereafter. Chairperson, yes, I hear what you're saying about it's not useless. It's true. But if you look at the whole spirit of the Constitution, it is to promote accountability and to promote a sense of responsibility on all sides of the government, all three arms of government. And we will not be exercising our responsibility if we don't put in place mechanisms of overview and oversight and keeping them accountable. So it's a balance, and I think that is what the executive members should also understand. If the government and the department are failing, the entire nation fails, and we also being held accountable because we are a useless parliament. So I think we must agree that there is always a tension between the arms of government, but it must be a healthy one. And it must be a balance, of reasonableness. But ultimately, accountability is the issue that we must enforce.
Okay, is it possible to do that? Eventually, the point of that a minister, if he's given 20 days or 19 days, if it's not raised at that time, because it demands what Karen is talking about. But also I think what the ministers have been raising an issue that they have their problem with question for written reply. They make departments be research centers of parties. A party just go to the minister, ask a question, because they need that information for themselves as a party. Then they use government to research for them. And then they research for them. Government research for them. But all these questions got nothing to do with the work of a member of parliament. It's a question that is disguised as a seeking information for a member of parliament, but what the party wants is a research done by government, not by the party. And then sometimes the bigger problem that we must always balance on this thing. So some of the reluctant is based on that, because it's very expensive, it's very detailed what that you need, all that. And they were saying that no, but it is correct for us to become research centers of parties. And then of course we know that there must be accountability, we accept that. But also, I don't think one party is there to research for your own thing as a party. The party must have its own research work. The answering question is a separate issue from what they are raising. And
my understanding was, I don't know if it's changed, but that the research section of Parliament is in fact open to all parties in any event. So if the party is looking for research, they can go to parliamentary research department to get that information. So I don't think we must be seeing this as parties looking to governments to be doing the research. Parliament can do the research if the parties can't do it themselves. I think we must look to it as genuinely requesting information, and we need to deal with it on that basis.
Raise that. Maybe we should consider, I think, firstly, you are saying we should accept one and two. But you must have an extension there that allows the minister. If we agree on 21 days, as the oversight model we want to propose, of course they will justify the reason why they are proposing that, and therefore should accept it. But of course the minister can be applying to the speaker, please allow us more extension. We have not finalized our work, we are doing on that. I think the speaker should be able to grant extension to the minister. Yeah.
That one be amended to incorporate the 21 days, or was she suggesting that we leave it at 10 working days and that the additional time only be brought in if the minister requests the time? That's the way I understood it. Yeah.
My colleague in Gauteng has serious problems with how that extension process works. Yes. Ministers ask for extension, they provide a date of when they will provide the reply, and then they don't provide the reply, and if they are reminded, they request another extension, and they extend. Now, I hear Ms. Killian say only one extension, but you will have even that sort of pushed right to the edge, and they will, yeah, in December ask for an extension and never provide the reply. And I just want to also say, in other parliaments they use what is known as the issue of disproportionate cost. And they have certain criteria of £800 for a question for written reply. If it costs more than that in order to obtain the information, then it becomes a matter of disproportionate cost on the basis of which they can refuse to reply to the question. Because it is so expensive to obtain the information. I mean, the Deputy President in a reply to questions has alluded to the Minister of Transport, who was Mr. Underberry at the time, that came with files of a reply that he had to search for a member's reply. And I mean, it can't be right. And we have had, my colleague can attest to it, numerous examples of research questions.
But I want to answer. You must answer this point, Ian. Firstly, I think, Michael, you are right, really, that government should not be made research centers of parties. Then that's a creative way that you can look at it, general. But who determines is another issue. And then because who determines the price, that this one is more than 5,000 rand or more than 10,000 rand, and there's another issue that you must look at it. But the point that you are raising, that Sbu was complaining about this man, because he took all this fire, but it's guaranteed that the member wants this thing anyway, first and foremost. But he wanted this thing for other purposes, and then that's to a specific problem, you know. Because if a member wants a question, it should be a question related to his constituents or other questions as he, as a member of parliament. But not using information that you seek from department to advance individual interests outside government. Because this is a bigger problem. That you make a department to do a little research for you, you got a company that fights, you take the very same information that is given to you as a member of parliament to advance your individual interests somewhere. It's a bigger problem that we are facing now, for the executive. When they raise this issue, the bigger issue that is worries us all. And we should find a way, though, to ensure that they account, they answer questions correctly, accurately, is fine. But also, generally, there must be limits. That you don't make executive to spend so much money. But what you want to do is to give all the answers to your friends who are working in that field to advance your own selfish interests. Otherwise, it's a bigger problem that we do. Of course, it would be difficult to catch a person like that. General, this system works very well. But it's not a good thing to do. Otherwise, you are wasting money for the state, really, for your own individual issue. And then stand down on to, you know, I'm not sure what it's called.
I'm sympathetic to you. You know, I'm very sympathetic. But you see, out of experience, both of you don't understand that an ordinary member of parliament doesn't have resources. We don't have resources. And I mean, I'm just what you see now. It can't even produce newspapers. It can't even produce the same information of parliament. I'm struggling. So I don't understand what is the argument, because that's the reality of an ordinary member of parliament. You see, it doesn't have the resources. And it's not what they are accommodating. And on, and you see also the originality of information is very crucial. We don't deal with introduction of legislation here. It comes from the executive. Where must I get that information? Because unless they say I must scuttle over the floor and come back with something that is not original, they are the ones who got the information of what exactly and how they know what this whole business is about. You see, it comes from the executive. So for me, there is that difficulty. It's how we find the balance. I don't agree. I agree with you that don't take the information outside parliament. But the bottom line is, accept the fact that members of parliament don't have the necessary resources and they don't have the originality of the legislation that we are fighting about. And unless members would come always here, then we'll have to be, keep on giving an opportunity to ask the minister to keep on answering the question of what is going on in this department. For me, that balance is not here or there. It's a little bit unfair, judgmental for people in the executive to think that they should not get any information from this.
I think in the criteria, the guidelines that is used in this book that we circulated, there is a guideline that says information that is readily available, can't use a question to get such type of information. There's also a provision that says questions may not raise questions which require impractically extensive answer. But I don't think that that should be a decision taken by officials. It should rather be the prerogative of the minister to say, no, this question is going to be, the answer is going to be so extensive, we don't have the resources. And I think that there has been examples, I think Minister Police has used that before. Minister Police, where he's actually said, I'm going to have to take police officials from their task in order to get this information, so it's not going to be practical for me to answer this particular question.
Chairperson, I hear what you said. I hear, you know, about the guidelines, and in principle, I don't have a problem. But I must say, members often have the opportunity to take a distant view, and I want to take, for instance, the police department as an example.
certain information is available in your annual report, but not everything. And if you don't probe matters that are contained in the annual report further, you don't know what is really the root cause of some of the trends that you have witnessed over some years. Now the issue is, yes, you can have your research department looking at, you know, the trends, etc., but you don't come to the root causes of it unless you go to the minister and say, have you considered this? Why is this? Secondly, it is the authentic custodian of the information. If your research department makes an analysis, it doesn't have the same authenticity, because this is from the horse's mouth. So we must not underestimate. Sometimes it is necessary to probe, and I often like to do that. I read an article in the newspaper, but then I don't think it can be accurate. Then I probe that matter further to determine what is really the reality. And then you get your answers back. I mean, the formal letter issue was an interesting one. But it would not carry the same weight if I just assume that this is the position than when I get a response back from the minister. So I think we must bear in mind, yes, there are limitations. Sometimes there will be. But the police minister, for instance, I mean, what has come out through the Portfolio Committee on Police recently has been actually an indictment of how the police has been managed for quite a large number of years. I mean that we, you know, so what I'm saying is some of the committees, and Michael said this earlier, some of the committees is part of the problem. But if we can't fix that, the only mechanism that that members have is to ask probing questions to the minister. And we shouldn't put too many obstacles in their way. And that is just what I want to conclude with. Thank you.
I don't want to take it much further. I just wanted to make the point in line with what Mr. Boy said, that one has to start from the point that members are honourable, that they're not going to be using this to make money on the side by selling information somewhere. And in second, if it ever comes to light that a member is using that mechanism and that information for personal reasons, then that should be an ethical issue that should be researched as an ethical issue. So I think essentially, One cannot begin to question the reasons why members would want to ask questions. On the other hand, the limitations are surely reasonable as well, and it's up to the minister to say what you're requesting is quite unobtainable without me using huge resources, so please accept that we cannot make that information available. The response may be that you request that in future these kind of stats do be kept, whatever, so there can be further engagement. But there must be circumstances in which the minister would not find it possible to provide information. And that shouldn't be a level for either chair. I know that some ministers say, I can't have two staff doing nothing but working on parliamentary questions. In fact, all departments should take it as a matter of course. They should have a team of officials whose main function is to provide answers to Parliament.
The rise of intellectualism inside Parliament should be congratulated, because coming from 1994, the levels were not so high. It was easy to run around members.
Yeah.
For me, intellectualism and the capacity of our members to be able to should be encouraged, and I'm very impressed. I don't sympathize with our conversation leaders. I'm impressed that members of Parliament are able to do research and demand more out of the minister. There's nothing wrong with that. It encourages people to read in society.
No, I just get that. We accept the point that this area must be worked out. Members of executive must be held accountable. We must not try to be wishy-washy in terms of the accountability of ministers. And then hopefully that members also won't use this thing, because those who are honorable today, tomorrow they may not be honorable. And therefore, it's just a thing that we should always bear in mind. These are human beings, they are very fallible like any other person. It's very tempting anyway to sell information, end up with the peddlers of information, use the department, take it there. It does happen. And therefore, we just hope that as we do it, we are not, we must never deny the right of members to get correct answers from minister. But I guess that might have, there be no harm to have an extension once by minister. There will be no harm really, because then we are covering the 10 days and the 20 days at the same time. Because who can say that the minister can, of course, if you can answer, show some social interest that you are prepared to answer, but time is against you. Make an application for extension. I think that would be granted once. And then, of course, the time and the date there will be a separate issue between, I think, the speaker, whoever the speaker works on that, and the minister concerned. The minister may want 25 more days, after 10 days anyway, because it's a very detailed question. Some of the ministers, anyway, they've got only one person there. It's what they call parliamentarizing people who deal with parliament. Many of them will never research in general. Those are not such pleasure. It's to come and fetch your question from your side, anyway, deliver this thing. But I think the point that Kaspa is saying is that as democracy matures, general ministers will set up a huge unit that deals with parliamentary issues. Because they are coming here, anyway, truly speaking. I don't think we should be. Yeah, I mean, you should not be kind, as you are saying. At the same time, you balance this issue. You have to ensure that also the department really don't spend millions of rand doing research for members. Even when this information is given to a member, the information is not utilized for the advancement of the accountability of ministers in parliament. It's other purposes. Then cause the problems in our own. But I think, Michael, we won't have a problem about the extension. You aren't going to have an infection in your department. And then the first thing you write a letter, apply for extension. If it is granted by the speaker, given the reason for extension, that will be fine. If it's once, it's correct. I think how they must also amend their side. It should be once application. Otherwise the people who apply and apply and apply and apply until the end of the term. You apply this one, this next time, the answer must be there. But I think 10 days is applicable if we, as a writer for application for extension. Because then can be negotiated by the office of the speaker and the minister. How many days do you need more to answer this question? The minister, of course, can say, I need another 24 days, I need a month. And because these are questions for written reply. There should be detailed questions to assist the member to formulate a very informed decision in whatever area that you want to work on that. I'm saying that you may put a limit in terms of days, but also open in terms of days that you apply. If it's for 2 days, the speaker grant for 2 days is fine. If it's for more than 10 days, if the speaker grant, that will be fine. And then I don't think we want to stipulate the days for application and that, because we trust the speaker anyway, want them to account to parliament on that. Michael, is it fine, that one?
Yeah.
That's why I just want to say that in the rule we should probably just formulate that a member of cabinet may request extension advising of by what date he will provide the reply, something like that, so that we don't have the negotiation to and fro.
Yeah.
So we have the letter coming to the speaker, including the date by when the reply will be submitted.
The original time is 10 days, and then the extension may not be more than 10 days.
Yeah.
Then you remain within your 21 days.
Okay.
Oh.
But you allow them space to see some 10 days.
Provided
it's not, of course, more than 10 days.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. To cover some of the issues that are raised by the
filing which? Filing which? Unanswered. Mechanism. The mechanism will kick in. Because then we show.
Yeah. What will apply for extension is granted, and if failed, I can commit the deadline shortly. There must be this mechanism. I'm not going to show what is this mechanism, because if we pose the question, what are you suggesting? Simply that ourselves are proposing mechanisms, we must at the same time apply our mind to see what type of mechanism that we are proposing for people to account to an answer question, whatever area, somewhere the host committee, the speaker, saying that. Generally, I'm from a speaker, I will ask you that what you are proposing. And then simply that you apply your mind, if you come in this mechanism, just come to me to set up mechanisms, but not even sure that.
I think that without even putting any sort of sanctions, the moment a minister's question remains unanswered, politically, that becomes a major problem for the party. Because, you know, any opposition party can then go to the media and say, this question remains unanswered despite whatever lens we've gone to. And they can make political haywire out of that. So I think that politically, there would be an embarrassment to the ministry. So I don't even think one needs to worry terribly about that. I think that the obviously depends on the type of question involved, but there certainly are political implications if a question remains unanswered and the opposition utilise that.
I'm not talking about a punitive measure to deduct X amount or whatever. No, all I'm saying is, I just wanted to say that there should be a regular report. So that, and the days of the, of, you know, how many days distance, or how many questions, and how the length of the period that they've exceeded the stipulated provisions in their rules, etc. And that in itself, as Sybil is saying, if that is published, then opposition parties can collect it. You see, at this stage, it is difficult because you must either maintain a system in a party, and I mean, Yami has said it earlier, we don't have so many people who can look at that. For me, as a whip, I'm responsible to report to my caucus that X number of questions have not been replied to. Every time it's an issue, because I must go and fetch the information from Michael, I can't maintain one official to monitor the period of time of questions, and, you know, how long they've been sort of overrun by the deadlines, etc. So I think as soon as we have such a report, that in itself will be a sort of a put-off for ministers, and they will start respecting the institution.
No, I don't think we really should entertain it more than what we have done. I guess that we have exhausted in terms of
I think we are fine by level first. Of course, we are coming to deal with the visibility process.
Yeah.
And on the 25th? On the 25th, and the Deputy Minister Fatima Shohen is coming. And then she is very happy to come and assist us for some of the areas that have worked on it. And I think we must allow that to happen, allow her to prefer some of the issues, just to avoid again repeating or reinventing the wheel when they work out some of these issues. And I know though that I thought that in the next week's meeting, next week's meeting, the motion of vote of no confidence is still there. And we know that they have worked it out, some of the colleagues already, some of the rules around that issue. It's important that at least the team, if it's possible, parent to have a copy to give some of the members here. There's a copy that we work on it today, some time ago, but not in this forum, in other forum, I guess. Just to ensure that we type in some of this. It would be a good idea for members of this team also to have a copy on that. Before the rules, if possible. Yes.
It's meeting on the 24th, which is next week, Thursday, after plenary, which I'm not sure what time that will be. And the agenda is to elect a new chair of the subcommittee on rules and to have a briefing on the motion of low confidence, as you say. And the likelihood is that that will be, the motion of low confidence will be referred to the subcommittee for development.
Parent, is for you to get the copies that JJ and the team. We have already worked in detail about how the rules should look like in terms of the, I know the parties are a little bit still debating that, but I think the court has ruled on this matter. Therefore, it will be easy for us to put in what should be the rule. I think there are rules that even Johnny, I know that in the ANC, the team was set up to look at this. They proposed the rules. I think they also communicated to other whips, and I think it's important that we should get that copy and then circulate it to members of this team, because anyway it's going to be referred to you. That would be a good idea for us to look at that one. It was a very emotional issue. It is very an issue that wasted our time on proclaiming and then in decision making area, because of Julie wanted to push us to do that thing. And I think we should do that on the another issue that is left, though. I think we have not finalized the question of what APCs.
APCs.
We have dealt with committees, then chief rules forum, and rules committee. And then I think then we must capture those things that are standing for us. Rules committee working on TESPA. And then also the chief rules forum. I guess that I'm not sure who can come from the chief rules forum to argue their case. And those two this year and the friend this year. I don't think we are very enthusiastic about chief rules forum. But I think it's going to work now. And I think those are issues that we still have to reapply our mind in the EPCs and just to capture some of the proposals that we have put forward. And then making them play many plenaries for discussion purposes, if not motion of members. I think we should just work on it a little bit. And in order for us then to conclude at least and make proposal to the team, then the team then will work it out and see the rules committee whatever time they decide to do that. Is that?
Jay, I think that yesterday in NACC, I think there was some discussion about the private members poll issue that will also be referred to this task team to have a look at. So, the guidelines, private members polls.
Yeah.
So that's probably going to be referred here as well, so we're going to need time to
look at that approach.
Oh, okay.
I think that is part of the legislative process. So I think I'll circulate and bring copies of the guidelines next week. That's one of the first sections on the legislative process. So I'm sure that, yeah, that's something we will get to quite early on, probably next week.
Okay. Okay, then I think we'll pick up other issues that are still need to be done. I'm standing myself because it should be comprehensive.
The leadership when it means. The advantage I was sent to Castle that at least members of the subcommittee also are members of the task team. It assumes that when we go there, we won't again stand up and say something that we never raised when we were drafting the issue, because otherwise you delay us again. Start again, rule by rule, chapter by chapter, it can never work, is like that. And then because from here surely we are going to report to the subcommittee. Subcommittee must look at everything. And hopefully we are there ourselves, we'll be able to move a little bit faster. And then they will set up for their rules, probably next year for the rules committee to consider from this year.
The meeting on Thursday next week, is that a small team, so we can
continue
to that? Is it not in a room?
Yeah, that's
in a room.
Okay.
Okay.
civil, you are fine?
Fine, thank you.
Okay. Syrian, you must be it.
Can I just ask one question? The copy of the revised chapter 10, draft amendment extract 16 October, I was just wondering, okay, now that's an etiquette related to the deputy president because that is now fallen away. Now, I wanted to pose a question about that here, but in view of the fact that it is now going to be conflated with the president, it's not relevant, so that's fine, I'm covered. Thank you.
No, mine is just a small point to say. It's a small point really to say that power corrupts. And if you don't protect yourself against power, you'll be running into that problem. It corrupts any individual. And that's why the institution must be vigilant. It must not be driven by party, but it must be always conscious in its own mind that power corrupts and must protect us against that.
That's
okay.
No.
Well said.
Thank you very much.
Right. I need to find it.